Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, December 2nd, 2019. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you are listening live over our radio or over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to National Liberty Alliance and click on Weekly Conference Call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up on our scripture reading where we left off last week. We're in the Gospel of Mark. Gospel of Mark, chapter 7, verses 24 through 37. And from thence he, Jesus, arose and went into the borders of Tyre and Sidon, and entered into the house, and would have no man know it, but he could not be hid. For a certain woman, whose young daughter had an unclean spirit, heard of him, and came and fell at his feet. The woman was a Greek.
Can you increase the level, John? It's very low.
By nation, and she besought him that he would cast forth the devil out of her daughter. But Jesus said unto her, Let the children first be filled, for it is not meet to take the children's bread and to cast it unto the dogs. And she answered and said unto him, Yes, Lord, yet the dogs under the table eat of the children's crumbs. And he said unto her, For this saying, go thy way, the devil is gone out of thy daughter. And when she was come to her house, she found the devil gone out, and her daughter laid upon the bed. And again, departing from the coast of Tyre and Sidon, he came unto the Sea of Galilee, to the midst of the coast of Decapolis. And they bring unto him one that was deaf and had an impediment in his speech. And they beseech him to put his hands upon him. And he took him aside from the multitude and put his fingers into his ears. And he spit and touched his tongue. And looking up into the heavens, he sighed and said unto him, Ephphatha, that is, be opened. And straightway his ears were open, and the string of his tongue was loosened, and he spake plain. And he charged them that they should tell no man. But the more he charged them, so much the more a great deal they published it, and were beyond measure astonished, saying, He hath done all things well. He maketh both the deaf to hear and the dumb to speak. Gospel of Mark, that was chapter 7. Verses 24 through 37. Okay. Yeah, Jan, I have no control over the volume there. It either comes up high or low. People will have to adjust, I guess, accordingly. All right. Well, anyway, tonight's focus, we're going to be looking at law and equity. That's going to be a topic for tonight. Anybody would like to follow along, You can go out to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, and if you highlight education, come down to weekly topics, click on weekly topics, and you'll be able to get a copy of this. It's right on the top of the list. Now, we have been posting all our topics over the past, 20 or so weeks, and you can find them all here on this page. You also, you can download them. They're PDFs. You can read them, use them, whatever the case may be. But all these topics are important to really come to an understanding of common law and our Constitution and the way our government, particularly the court, works. So last week we did look at the Declaration of Independence, and the week before we looked at government by consent. And this week we're going to look at law and equity. And we'll constantly post these papers in PDF form, memorandums we'll call them, on this page every Monday. So again, people can download that and read along and go back and listen to some of the others and read along with that also. Okay, so we're going to pick up on that law and equity. Memorandum of Law and Equity. The judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, Article 3, Section 2. The purpose of this memorandum is to clarify the profound difference between law and equity. Equity courts are nisi prius courts that are presided over by judges who rule according to regulations, statutes, and codes or contracts. Courts that proceed according to regulations, statutes, and codes are for bureaucrats, corporations, and other fictional entities, and not people. Equity courts can hear contract cases between two people if both agree or if the value of the case is less than $20. Statutes. Statutes are an act of the legislature declaring, commanding, or forbidding something. A particular law enacted and established by the will of the legislative department of government. The written will of the legislature is solemnly expressed according to the forms necessary to constitute it the law of the state. This word is used to designate the written law in contradistinction to the unwritten law. Regulations. Regulations are the act of regulating a rule or order prescribed for management or government, a regulating principle, a precept, rule of order prescribed by superior or competent authority relating to action of those under its control. Codes. A code is a complete system of positive law scientifically arranged and promulgated by legislative authority, a systematic body of law. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18. Congress shall have the power to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying out into execution the foregoing powers, listed in Clauses 1 through 17, and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the Government of the United States or in any department or office thereof. Law courts are presided over by juries, 12 people, who rule according to natural law. No judges, regulations, statutes, or codes allowed in a court of law because they lack due process. Liberty is freedom from equity courts without our permission, in other words, free from government interference of our behavior. Unalienable rights are the spirit of natural law, the law of our Creator and not of man. All law is to be understood in light of an unalienable rights. Any law repugnant to the spirit is by nature Creator's null and void. The law of the land is also known as the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution for the United States of America, and its capstone Bill of Rights. These are all natural law documents that were constructed upon natural law principles. To deny natural law is to deny these documents, and to deny these founding documents would be treason. We, the people, via the Constitution, Bill of Rights, and Declaration of Independence, vested our judiciary with two jurisdictions, law and equity. It is extremely important that we understand the difference between the two. Simply put, The tribunals in an equity court are elected or appointed judges, while the tribunals in law courts are the people, also known as the juries. These law courts are called courts of record that proceed according to the natural law, liberated from all statutes. U.S. Constitution, Article 6. This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuant thereof, and all treaties made, or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. And the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the constitutions or laws of any state to the contrary, notwithstanding. Equity and justice are substantially equivalent terms, if not synonymous. Under constitutional provision guaranteeing right to obtain justice, the justice to be administered by courts is not an abstract justice as conceived of by the judge, but justice according to the law, or, as it is phrased in the Constitution, conformability to the laws. Equity law is the system of jurisprudence administrated by purely secular tribunals in equity courts. Judges are to act under American jurisprudence, which is the philosophy of law, the knowledge of things divine and human, the science of that what is right and what is wrong. It is the constant and perpetual disposition to render every man his due. It has no direct concern with questions of moral or political policy, for they fall under the providence of ethics and legislation. They are to mete out justice, which is the most extensive sense of the word, which differs little from virtue, for it includes within itself the whole circle of virtue. Justice, being itself a part of virtue, is confined to things simply good and evil, and consists in a man's taking such a proportion of them as he ought. Law of nature. Its natural law. It is absolute law, the true and proper law of nature, also known as common law, as distinguished from law created by an enactment of legislatures. Common law is the use of legal principles to discover by the light of nature or abstract reasoning comprised of the body of those principles and rules of actions relating to the government and security of persons and property, which derive their authority solely from usage and custom of ancient antiquity. The Supreme Court shall have appellate jurisdiction both as to law and facts, in all cases in equity, thereby becoming the final arbiter and maker of the case law. Government, governed by American jurisprudence under the rules of common law, the Supreme Court has no appellate authority over cases in law, also known as jury trials, with one exception of protecting an individual if an unalienable right of the same is violated. Federal district court judges, when hearing a case in equity, are governed by American jurisprudence and case law under the rules of common law. In cases in law, judges or magistrates take an administrative role with no summary judgment powers, whereas the jury, also known as tribunal of 12 people, is the final arbiter deciding the facts of law and a remedy and the power of nullification and mercy. This is called a court of record, from which there is no appeal, as the United States Supreme Court said in the case of Sakonikloth v. Bathamathi. The decision of a superior court may only be challenged in a court of appeal. The decision of an inferior court is subject to collateral attack. In other words, in a superior court, one may sue an inferior court directly rather than resorting to an appeal to an appellate court. Decisions of a court of record may not be appealed. It is binding on all other courts. However, no statutory or constitutional court, whether it be an appellate or Supreme Court, can second-guess the judgment of a court of record. The judgments of a court of record, whose jurisdiction is final, is as conclusive on all the world as the judgment of this court would be. It is as conclusive on to this court as it is on to other courts. It puts an end to the inquiry concerning the facts by deciding it. Under our system of government, upon the individuality and intelligence of the citizen, the state does not claim to control him or her, except as his or her conduct to others, leaving them the sole judge as to all that affects themselves. All laws, rules, and practices which are repugnant to the Constitution are null and void. Every man is independent of all laws except those prescribed by nature. He is not bound by any institution formed by his fellow man without his consent. Law is that which is laid down, ordained, or established. We the people ordained and established the Constitution for the United States of America. We the people vested Congress to make law via Article 1, Section 8. We the people did not vest Congress with lawmaking powers to control our behavior. We the people are above the Constitution and all legislative law, whereas government authorities are under the Constitution. We the people are subject only to the laws of nature and of nature's God. All codes, rules, and regulations are for government authorities only, not human creators in accordance with God's laws. All codes, rules, and regulations are unconstitutional and lack due process. The phrase at law is used to point out that a thing which is to be done according to the course of the common law. It is distinguished from the proceeding in equity. All laws, rules, and practices which are repugnant to the Constitution are null and void. Sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to law, for it is the author and source of law. But in our system, while sovereign powers are delegated to the agencies and government, sovereignty itself remains to the people, by whom and for whom all government exists and acts. And the law is the definition and limitation of that powers. For the very idea that a man may be compelled to hold his life, or the means of living, or any material right essential to the enjoyment of life, at the mere will of another, seems to be intolerable in our country, where freedom prevails, as being the essence of slavery itself. The authority of the legislature is limited and defined under Article 1 of the Constitution. The authority of the executive is limited and defined under Article 2 of the Constitution, and the authority of the judiciary is limited and defined under Article 3 of the Constitution. Natural law. The only laws that apply to we the people are the laws of nature and of nature's God, of which we are entitled. We the people have declared in our founding documents that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rulemaking or legislation which would abrogate them. U.S. Code 18 and 26, when applied upon we the people, are null and void. Congress can make no law or rule to control the behavior of we the people. Nature's law is personified in the following. But this shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, saith the Lord, I will put my law in their inward parts, and write it in their hearts, and will be their God, and they shall be my people. Jeremiah 31, verse 33, and this is reiterated in Hebrews chapter 8, verse 10. But when the Gentiles, which have not the law, do by nature the things contained in the law, these having not the law, are a law unto themselves, which show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing witness, and their thoughts, the meanwhile accusing or else excusing one another. Romans chapter 2, verses 14 through 15. Everybody knows when a wrong has been done to another, and by examining our conscience as to what remedy might be necessary to satisfy it. Positive law, also known as legislative law, can never take into an account the complexities and differences between each case in the court of justice. Only the human heart, contemplating nature's law, also known as common law, so-called because it's law common unto all, can discern justice. As the 12 bear witness to the truth, so a petit jury of 12 bear witness to the truth and its proper remedy. If a jury is conflicted beyond accord, the accused must be set free. For there is no such thing as a hung jury. For the declaring of a jury hung by one partial state-compensated judge who has not had the counseling of 11 other witnesses is a travesty of justice and places the accused in double jeopardy. This allows the state to continue trial after trial until it gets its desired results. Therefore, a jury must convene and not be given back its liberty until it's rendered a judge decision, which it is its duty to perform. The definition of law is that which is laid down, ordained, or established. It is the rule or the method according to which the phenomena or actions coexist or follow each other and must be obeyed or be subject to sanctions or legal consequences. In our republic, common law, equity, and the Constitution are the laws of the land by which we the people chose to be judged when we assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal stations to which law, the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle us. In the United States, before any court can have authority to hear a case, the court must first have both personam and subject matter jurisdiction. Any court not of record has no authority to proceed without the consent of the person involved. No judge or legislator can alter that which the people ordained. To alter is high treason. American courts are vested by the people, the author and the source of law, through constitutions ordained by the people. Therefore, a court must first have constitutional authority over an individual before it can proceed. In criminal cases, a court must have an indictment by an untainted grand jury, in other words, the permission by the people to proceed. Any judge who instructs the petit jury that the said judge decides the law taints the jury and is a pseudo-court under fiction of law. Furthermore, all state laws and constitutions are ultimately governed by the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution for the United States of America, as ordained by the people in Article 6, Clause 2, that defines the law of the land, which renders anything in the Constitution of the laws of any state to the contrary, notwithstanding, null and void. No judicial process, whatsoever form it may assume, can have any lawful authority outside of the limits of the jurisdiction of the court or judge by whom it is issued, and an attempt to enforce it beyond these boundaries is nothing less than lawless violence, and that which the law requires is to be done or forborne to be determined to a determinate person or public at large, correlative to a vested and coexistent right in such person or public, and the breach of which constitutes negligence. Congress was not vested with legislative powers to pass civil statutes or criminal law statutes or any other statute that control the behavior of the people. There are two common law maxims that govern all criminal cases. Number one, in order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. And number two, the state cannot be the injured party. As for the injured party, there is a common law maxim that states, for every injury, there must be a remedy. Therefore, in a criminal case, restitution is more just for all parties than incarceration. 16 American Jurisprudence, 2nd Edition, Section 114. As to the Constitution, which, with reference to common law, an important canon of construction is that constitutions must be construed to reference to the common law. The common law so permitted destruction of the abatement of nuisances by summary proceedings, and it was never supposed that a constitutional provision was intended to interfere with this established principle. even though there is no common law in the United States in the sense of a national customary law as distinguished from the common law of England adopted in the several states. In interpreting the federal constitution, recourse may still be had to the aid of the common law of England. It has been said that without reference to the common law, the language of the federal constitution could not be understood. The general misconception is that any statute passed by legislators bearing the appearance of law constitutes the law of the land. The U.S. Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and any statute to be valid must be in agreement with the Constitution. It is impossible for both the Constitution and the law violating it to be valid. One must prevail. This is succinctly stated as follows. The general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, though having the form and name of law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose, since unconstitutionality dates from the time of its enactment, and not merely from the date of the decision so branding it. An unconstitutional law in legal contemplation is as inoperative as if it had never been passed. Such a statute leaves the question that it purports to settle, just as it would had the statute had been enacted. Since an unconstitutional law is void, the general principle follows that it imposes no duties, it confers no rights, it creates no office, it bestows no power or authority on anyone, it affords no protection, and justifies no acts performed under it. A void act cannot be legally consistent with a valid one. An unconstitutional law cannot operate to supersede any existing valid law. Indeed, in as far as to the statutes run counter to the fundamental law of the land, it is superseded thereby. No one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law, and no courts are bound to enforce it. The author of law. God is the author of the common law, which he wrote in the hearts of men, thereby giving we the people both the knowledge of the right and wrong, and with unalienable rights of we the people to judge each other through tribunals called juries. We the people ordained common law in Amendment 7, and Congress clearly followed suit and established it through 28 U.S.C. subsection 132. We, the sovereign people, ordained and established the Constitution, which is the law of the land, to be obeyed by all elected, appointed, and hired servants. We, the people, vested Congress with certain law-making powers in Article 1, Section 8, among which we gave, again, no legislative powers to write ordinances, regulations, codes, or statutes that would control the behavior of we, the people, or apply any set punishment upon we, the people. That authority belongs to the people. The very meaning of the word sovereignty is that the decree of the sovereign makes the law. A consequence of this prerogative is the legal ubiquity of the king, that's nature's God. His majesty, in the eye of the law, is always present in all his courts. Though he cannot personally distribute justice, his judges, or juries, are the mirror by which the king's image is reflected. Unalienable rights come from nature's God and are not subject to alienation. The characteristic of those things which cannot be brought or sold or transferred from one person to another, such as certain personal rights, example, liberty, unalienable, incapable of being alienated, that is, sold and transferred. Rights are defined generally as powers of free action, not subject to legal constraint of another, being unconstrained, having the power to follow the dictates of one's own will, not subject to the dominion of another, and not compelled to involuntary servitude. Any statute that violates rights is null and void. Conclusion. Equity courts are for bureaucrats, corporations, and other fictional entities. It's a court not of record, where one judge decides the facts, law, and penalties according to regulations, statutes, codes, or a contract under American jurisprudence, whose decisions can be appealed to a higher court. Black's Law, Equity. Equity is a body of jurisprudence or a field of jurisdiction differing in its origin, theory, and methods from the common law. It is a body of rules existing by the side of the original civil laws founded on distinct principles and claiming incidentally to supersede the civil law in virtue of a superior sanctity inherent in those principles. Whereas law courts are courts of record for the people, it's a court where the tribunal is a jury of 12 people who decide the facts, the law, and the penalty according to the laws of nature's God, and whose decisions cannot be appealed. Courts of record are administered by magistrates who records and enforces the will of the tribunal, the people. Bouvier's Dictionary, At Law. This phrase is used to point out that thing which is to be done according to the course of the common law. It is distinguished from proceeding in equity. Within constitutional guarantee of a jury trial, which refers to common law actions, as distinguished from cases in equity and certain other proceedings. Decency, security, and liberty alike demands that government officials be subject to the same rules of conduct that are common to the citizens. In a government of laws, the existence of the government will be imperiled if it fails to observe the law scrupulously. Crime is contagious. If government becomes lawbreaker, it breeds contempt for the law. It invites every man to become a law unto himself. And against that pernicious doctrine, this court shall resolutely set its face. Okay, Jen, do we have any announcements or any questions? And I think I see Gerard here. Gerard, are you here? You've been muted, so you got to unmute yourself.
Yes, I have some announcements for tonight. I don't have any questions.
All right. I'll see what I could do for next week with the volume levels, because I can't really control from here, you know?
Right.
So, but anyway, before you go on, Gerard, are you here? It looks like he's here, but I know he was muted. Oh, he's unmuted now. Is that you, Gerard?
Yeah, I mean, he's got a volume problem, too.
Yeah, maybe he's muted on his own computer. But right, I'm sure he'll pipe in when he can speak or whatever. All right, I think there was someone that wanted to make an announcement. I think Gerard had some information or mentioned it to me, I think. Trying to remember what that was or who that was.
Was it Dan from Montana on the vaccines, maybe?
Might have been. Don't remember. But go right ahead. I know Gerard was working on that vaccine thing. So,
okay. Right,
but anyway, you said we had some questions, or we have some announcements?
Just have a couple of announcements.
Okay.
The first is one that you know very well about, and that was you were interviewed last Saturday night from 8 to 10 on Patriot's Soapbox. And I posted it on the website, and there's a link to it, so you can go directly to it and listen to the audio. A link in the newsletter. And I understand you're working on at least a Sunday at 1 o'clock, and maybe every other Sunday or every Sunday from now on Patriot Soapbox, so that'd be great. We're getting a grip on our election laws. I guess we have a volunteer that is going through. The problem we ran into here is a lot of the laws are we get a link, and each link is one section of the law and then another subsection of the law. So some of these laws, when you combine them into one, might have 600 separate PDFs in them. And so it takes a while to go through and combine them all into one large PDF, which is what we need, because we have to be able to scan them once, not 600 times, to get a particular piece of information out of them. And as you all know, we have divided the 50 states into 10 groups for the Committeeman Project, and we need 10 volunteers to lead those 10 regions. I have some leads on some of them if you're interested in working on the committee men as a group leader, just send me an email to jan@nationallibertyalliance.org to volunteer. And that's about the only announcements I have tonight, John.
Okay. I don't know if anybody has seen if Brent is here yet. You don't see him out there?
I'd like to add one thing. Apparently, I didn't know this, and I'm not sure if you knew it, John, but when you send a mass email out, it tells you that this email went out to 7,849 people. What it didn't tell you is it sends them out 1,000 at a time. So if you send out one email, it takes about 8 hours for that to go out. And if you send out two emails, it's going to take about 16 hours. And so this last weekend, you sent out a couple announcements. I sent out a couple announcements. And then I sent out the newsletter. And I think it's 2 days we have the same stuff ricocheting around the Internet. So Carl's going to take a look and see what we can do to maybe improve that so they go out more, like, concisely on the time when they say it does. I was getting feedback from these emails were being delivered Sunday afternoon into Monday, you know, for a Saturday meeting. So we need to do something on that.
Yeah, I think the problem is with the server that we're using. We're using someone else's server, which actually are the people who helped us to create the website that we have.
Right.
Maybe Carl can help us find our own server or something that we'll pay whatever it has to be to make access for sending those emails out. I know there's so many restrictions. Even the server that I personally have at this point in time that we use, even that one for our mailing systems, even that one only allows so many mailing to go out so often. You know, I have a special program that sends, if I want to send out 5,000 emails, maybe it could only go out maybe so many per hour and so many per day and so many at a time. And so those restrictions, yeah, I'm familiar with that. I didn't realize it was that bad, though, because that is pretty bad. We do have 8,000 members, over 8,000 members now, so we're growing. And, like you said, we're going to be on the Patriot soapbox, and hopefully we'll pick up a lot of new membership there. A lot of those people, call themselves Patriots, and they seem to be very interested in what's going on. So they should be interested in taking control of their government. And that's what we're teaching people to do. Now, we did announce the committee man program that we're putting together, and Jan just mentioned a few things about we're working on looking into the laws, the specific laws in the different states. But there's some things, no matter what they say, no matter what they do, and no matter what's written in their laws, are irrelevant to common law. If it's in opposition to common law, and common law provides for us to have self-government. I mean, government by consent, self-governing. So we have government by consent, and anything that interrupts that or prevents that is null and void, irrelevant to anything. As we read in our Constitution, that any of the laws of the constitutions of any states or the laws of any states, to the contrary, notwithstanding. So therefore, they're null and void. One of the first major United States Supreme Court decisions, Marbury versus Madison, way back in the beginning, that was the key point to that whole process or that whole thing, that at the end of the day, anything repugnant to the Constitution is null and void. So just a couple of key points. A committeeman must be elected in their own election district. We will be training people and teaching people about that and how to fill out a petition. It's called a designating petition. That designating petition, okay, is the process of coming in to get onto the ballot. You have to file a designating petition, and the primary election is for the sole purpose. In the case of the committee man is the only person that is literally elected at the primary election. Everyone else, it's a runoff to see who's going to get onto the ballot on that particular party's you know, whatever it is that they're running for, whatever position, for the general election. So the key thing, though, each state may do their designating petitions at different times. And that's what's being worked on right now. We need to go through each state to discover when they do that. I know in New York we have a six-week window. And I don't remember exactly when. I'm thinking maybe it starts in April and ends in June. And if I recall, I think that's what it is. And maybe 2 weeks in April and the 4 weeks of June. And then when you come to the end of June, you have to have your filing in. And anything after that date doesn't get in. You can't file your petitions before the beginning of the six-week start-off. So people have 6 weeks to walk their petition. And walking a petition in order to get onto the ballot, and again, if there is nobody that is challenging you, then you're deemed elected. You don't get onto the ballot. There's no need for that because there's no one running against you. So you are just deemed elected. That's the law, period. But the bottom line on this is that you have to get X amount of signatures. It's 5% of the people, the constituents within your election district. Generally speaking, I don't think there's any election district that has more than 400 people that are in a particular party. So you may have 800 people in the sense of 400 Democrats and 400 Republicans. But the point is that there's usually no more than 400. So if you have 400 people, 5% is only 20 signatures. But most election districts, especially up in the rural areas, I know where I live, it's I wouldn't call it rural, but semi-rural. I only need 10 signatures, actually 8 signatures, so I go out and get 10 when I was running. So you only need about 8, 10 signatures. Most people only need about that, 10 signatures. So that could be done in one evening after work in the spring or early summer. So it's not a big thing to run for committee man. There's not a lot of work to do. It doesn't take up a lot of time. And your business really is interviewing individuals who want to run for office or any office that affects your election district. You know, your assemblyman, your state senator, your congressman, your mayor or some board or that may run the town, or you know, all of the elections. You know, right down from the village to the town or city. Into the county and right up to the state and eventually into the federal level also. But the great part of the job, and this is without pay, by the way, there is no pay to do this. So once you become a committee man, you're probably going to do about 40 hours of work in the entire year. So it's really minimum. But most of your work is really interviewing. You get the opportunity to interview these people going on to that ballot. And then you get to decide whether you're going to let that person get on that ballot or not. And right now, the powers that be, a small group, generally speaking, 5 people per state actually make these decisions all the way down the line. Very rarely does anyone get in that's not kind of blessed from that process. But in any event, we need to take that back, bring it back to the grassroots, bring it back to the election districts, and let the people decide. And so one of the prime things that we're teaching is, number one, committee men should know the Constitution. For how can you ask the questions concerning the Constitution if you don't know the Constitution? And when they answer those questions, how can you know they answered correctly? Obviously, you have to have a basic knowledge of the Constitution, the law of the land. And again, it's not complex, you know. We've all seen the little booklets, the handbooks go right into your pockets, you know, pocket handbooks that's very thin. It's unbelievable on how short our Constitution really is, and at the same time, how deep it is, and how powerful it is, and how it works in unison with common law. For it is a common law document created by maxims, and that's the key thing. We have a Constitution of maxims, things that cannot be denied: that which is right, just, virtuous. We need to be able to understand the Constitution to ask questions. But those people running for office that want to hold these positions, they should know the Constitution. After all, they're going to raise their hand and swear allegiance to it. They're going to swear to support and uphold the Constitution. And yet, they don't know the Constitution. So how can they make that oath? How can a sheriff become a sheriff and then go down and talk with the county attorney in issues that may come up concerning the Constitution? We didn't elect an attorney to make these decisions. We elected an individual that's a sheriff to make these decisions. He or she should be able to understand the Constitution and execute it accordingly. We elected them to do that, not a lawyer. And that's the problem with every elected individual. So as soon as you start to question these people, immediately you're met by their filter, which is some attorney, usually a bar attorney. And so therefore, we have a bar attorney who believes that the Constitution has been abrogated. Believe it or not, that is the fact that they truly do believe. Actually, it's the common law that's been abrogated. Therefore, the Constitution has been abrogated. The federal judges understand the Constitution in itself is no longer in existence, but they take ruling without a Constitution, and they ignore any positions brought up by anybody in their courts. This is an unfortunate, terrible reality. In America, this is what it is. And anybody who has been in the courts a little bit here and there realizes it very quickly. Those of us who have not been in the courts yet, they may find this hard to believe and don't understand. But this is the facts. And the only way we're going to change this is if we, the people, take control. We, the people, decide who's going to get onto those ballots. And one of the greatest things about the committee man is the power to recall. You know, if an individual is being disobedient to the Constitution, it's called bad behavior, then they're subject to be removed. And we, the people, can remove them. We can call special meetings, pull in all of the necessary committee men with the affected particular election districts that make up the constituents of that individual in office for whatever body it is, you know, whatever office they're running for, or they're in, shall I say. And we can go out and get a few signatures apiece and do a recall. So we can recall these individuals, pull them right out of office, and run another special election to refill that vacancy in whatever political subdivision that they were in. But it's up to the people to do these things, and that's what the committee man does. So generally, to cover this just run quickly, and again, we're going to be doing pages on this, place where people can go to get this information. So you have to fill out a designating petition. You have to walk it within your district, your election district, within a window of 6 weeks. Again, each state may have a different time period, but that's what we're exploring right now, the time periods of filing designated petitions. You're going to be met with resistance. You're going to be rejected. Sometimes they'll reject it. We're going to have a plan made for those people, those places that are rejecting it. We're going to talk about different ways to get it into the process, just to get it into the system so it's been filed. And the grand jury will be working as a tribunal, if necessary, to force it through. But once it becomes a matter of public record, even if they continue to reject it, but it's public record that it was sent and rejected, public record that the papers have been done and published, and the fact that you are the elected committeeman. We know that we're going to have to go to court next year on this. Anybody who runs for committeeman in 2020 doesn't take their positions until January of 2021. So we have a whole year of doing this process. We only have a short period of time in each state, though, to get people in. Again, depending on their window, their six-week window. But once we get through the process, well, actually, probably before we get through the process, we're going to immediately start filing lawsuits against every single state, the Board of Elections in every single state, to force the acknowledgement of the elected committeemen. And that should be a simple process for us, and we should win it hands down rather quickly, because we do expect before that to come that we, the people, have taken back control of our courts of justice on the federal level. And thereby, it's a no-brainer. At that point, we will take it back on the state level. And so by controlling the state and federal level, as far as making sure that justice prevails and that the people rule their own courts of law, which is what common law requires. No government agents permitted, with the exception, of course, of a couple of officers. But none is able to make a judicial decision other than the people themselves. And tonight's paper, you know, knowing and understanding the difference between law and equity, if anyone still doesn't understand the difference between law and equity, take down that paper, go get that memorandum on our website. It's under education, and when you get under, you know, just highlight education, click on weekly topics. Right now it's the top one. Take that paper, it's 9 pages, I believe, we read tonight. Reread it. Read it slowly. Look at the footnotes. Understand every word, every phrase, every sentence, every paragraph. And when you do it that way, you know, one thing I've come to realize some years back is there's no need to remember anything. All you need to do is understand it. And if you work diligently to understand it at its most deepest level, you'll never forget it. Articulating it, of course, takes more time with the material, but you will understand it even if you can't articulate it yourself. But again, more and more time you spend with this material and other materials such as this, then more easily it flows off the tongue, so to speak. You're able to articulate it well. But again, knowing it and understanding it is the key thing. Anybody who does not understand the difference between law and equity, and that is most people, okay, I speak to myself first. It was a long time I didn't understand it. And I struggled for a very long time trying to understand it. And it quite ended up to be quite simple, but it's difficult to find. You can't just go somewhere and to be taught somewhere what the differences really are. They don't want you to know, okay? Here at National Liberty Alliance, you can come and learn it because we've researched it, brought it out, and laid it out on paper clearly. And, of course, we have our open forums, such as tonight, where people can come and ask questions on issues like that. So it's absolutely, you know, it's really a necessity for the people to understand the difference between those two things before they can be free in their mind. And you will never be free in your body, in other words, from the government itself, until you first become free in your mind. You need to think free before you can be free. You cannot be free until you can think free. And understanding these things gives you the power and the ability and the understanding of thinking free, to think free. So, again, this is so, so important. And I did get an email from somebody recently. It may have come off of, well, who knows where it came from. But I got an email. They were very upset with me because I had mentioned something concerning the fact that, you know, Trump really can't save the nation. And I didn't say it that like that, of course. I've always said it, and I'll say it again. Trump's doing a great job. He's going to, it appears that nothing's going to stop him and other people working with him. He's not alone. To bring this nation back. Him and many other people work to be able to prevent that from happening. But nevertheless, even all the work he has done, if the people do not get up and take control of this government now, we're going to lose it forever again anyway. You know, either we're going to have government by consent of the people or we're not. We have to be self-governed. And if we're not going to step up to take control of this and teach our children this, then we don't deserve our liberty. We don't deserve such a government to live under. We'll continue to live under the chains of the legislative will and the will of the courts, okay? Because right now, that's where we're at. We've been there for quite a few years. I'd say probably 70 years, or there or close to it. As long as I've been alive, we've been under the thumb of government because we've been ruled by statutes, never meant to be. Before the 1930s, that just didn't happen. That's why you look back and people were so much freer back then. And if you really look to see, you know, things, you say, whoa, look what people do there or here. You know, I don't know anybody looking back into some of this history. It's because they were free to do as they want. And the only law, or the only rule, the only law they lived under is do no harm. you harm somebody, you're going to pay that penalty, but do no harm. So that is the key. But right now, people go to all these different courts. You go to traffic court, and you just get out your wallet, and you pay the penalty, the slave tax. You know, the IRS comes about, and you just fill out your papers and pay your slave tax because you're a slave. We're all slaves. Again, I speak to myself first, but we have to step up and do something about that. And it begins with becoming commitment. So everybody has a duty to become a committeeman. Let me say that again. Everybody has a duty to become a committeeman. And again, it's only about 40 hours a year. That's it. And it's during the election time. And it's in the evening, 2 or 3 hours in an evening here and 2 or 3 hours in an evening there, interviewing the people we're going to put onto those ballots and requiring them to know the Constitution, to be a statesman and not a politician. We don't want a politician. We want more people like Trump. Trump is not a politician. He doesn't play the political games. He's out there trying to fix the problem and do what is right for the people. And if all of these people were doing that, we'd have a much better nation. We the people would truly be much freer than what we are. Those kind of people are not going to be in office unless we the people do something about it, become educated, and make it happen. We need to, and we got a plan to take this knowledge and understanding into the schools from the lowest level in grammar school right up into high school and college. That people need to understand what they need to do as a citizen. And I use that word without a problem, because they destroyed the meaning of words. A citizen doesn't mean that you're under civil law. It just does not mean that. Our founding fathers used that word. So I'm not going to shy away from that word. I wouldn't use it in court, okay, but I would use it here. And again, we will find the word citizen, I think, twice in the Constitution. At least once I know the word citizen is there. But in any event, they do use the word citizen in a negative way in the 14th Amendment, okay, and that's a problem. And we have to challenge the fraud. Not get into the sandbox with these people and play by their rules. Okay, no, we don't do that. We step up and call it for what it is. It's fraud. It's null and void. It doesn't mean that. It means what it means. And we can go into our law dictionaries and discover exactly the meanings of words. Okay, so in any event, and that's just one word, but in any event, we the people, we have a duty. We must teach our children that they have a duty at least once in their life to become a committeeman. We have a duty to respond to the call for a grand jury or trial jury. We must teach our children that they need to do this. We have a duty to understand our government and our process and our common law and the way things should work. And we have a duty to teach our children the same. We will require and shall require that our children, that this should be part of curriculum as much as plain basic mathematics, reading and writing, and other things, geography and history. They need to understand the Constitution and the law of the land, and also, of course, the other things, how to become a committeeman and so on. So it begins with us. We're either going to take this nation back or not. Time is running short. I believe there are some states that do their process early on, possibly as early as January. And for those people, we only got 30 days to do something. So people need to be connecting and figuring things out and finding out what's necessary to do in their particular states. We will work diligently to get that information to the people. The individual, Lenny Roberto, up in upstate New York here, oh goodness, he's all the way over there in, let me see what county he's in. He's all the way out west. I think he's in Niagara County. So he's all the way in the tip of New York there. But anyway, he's the guy that taught me and numerous other people that we've worked together to become committeemen, how the process works. And we've got a recording that he had done on how to fill out a designating petition. I was going to do one, but since we have this this video of him going through it step by step, point by point, we're going to use his video, and we'll put that up there. So we'll teach people how to fill out the designating petition. We'll teach them the power and the authority of the committee man. We'll talk to them about how to walk the district, how to file their papers, and we'll talk to them and we'll teach them on how all the resistance that you're going to get and how we're going to get around that resistance and get this thing filed. We will teach the people, let's see, we got the how to fill out the petition, how to walk, how to get your list of the individuals within your election district, how to avoid and the association, and we will shut down that association just by becoming the committeeman. Now, we started this announcement back, I don't know, maybe 3-4 weeks ago, maybe a little more, okay? And I'm just looking here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. We got 19 people signed up for committeemen. We're not going to take back the political powers and authorities back to the people with 19 people. We're just not going to do it. It is possible to do it with 50 people, but we'd need 50 people, one for each state. Okay? We need bare minimum 5 people per state. Bare minimum. We can do it with 5 people per state, but it is much, much, much more easier and workable, and be able to bring your state back into order, in a proper way, to be able to take control and bring the proper, the right kind of people into office. We really need 5 people per county. There's about 3,100 counties. We're looking at 15,000 people. We also need 15,000 people to be the administrators for the juries. So we need a total of 30,000. But I say that every single administrator should run for committeeman this year also, this coming year. So if we get 15,000 people that sign up for administrators and those 15,000 people run for their positions, we will be well-positioned, 5 people in every county across the nation. But again, it requires the people to step up and do something. If we're going to sit back and be lazy and think the other guy is going to do it, it's not going to happen. I can tell you that. It's just not going to happen because the guy next to you is thinking the same thing. I'll let someone else do it. Now, it's time for us to get off our fannies and do this. And I'm going to look every week, and I'm going to tell it the way it is. We'll have to embarrass people if we have to get them out there to take up the control of their country on the grassroots level. So right now, I forget the number I counted. What I counted, about 20 or something, 16 or 20 or something. We need a lot more. Come on, everybody needs to get in there and sign up for committeeman. Everybody, definitely the administrators. It's only 40 hours a week a year, if that. A lot of the smaller counties and stuff, less maybe. I don't know. But no more than that. And again, it's exciting. If you don't, I don't know. I got to believe people realize how exciting it is or would be to be the people to decide who gets onto the ballot, to be the people to say, no, you're not qualified. I don't like you. You don't know the Constitution. You're not a statesman. You're a politician. Go back and learn how to be a statesman. Go to National Liberty Alliance. Take the courses. Learn how to be a statesman. Understand the Constitution. Understand the Founding Fathers, who we are, where we came from, the difference between law and equity, and how we are to be self-governing. And you need to be obedient to the people. We're not your servants. You are our servants. Go back and learn that. When you learn that, come back, and we'll put you on the ballot. Doesn't everybody want to do that job? I'm dying to do that job. I got too many other things that I can't do that job. Well, maybe I can. Maybe I will run for committeeman too. Again, 40 hours a year, I can do that. So I think I will. I think I'm going to run for committeeman this year again. I was going to set it aside. I know I can't be an administrator because that's a 40-hour a week job. I'd love to be that position, but I have to be here for National Liberty Alliance to continue things here. And we need a small staff of people, and people will be in a paid position at that point. It'll be a full-time job, and our job is to provide for the people to be a place where people, where we could facilitate a place for the people to become educated, to communicate, to organize, to see who else is doing what in your neighborhood and make contact with them. So under the committee man on a blue bar, if you click on that, become a committee man, and you fill out that paper, sign up to become a committee man, and then your name will appear on a page underneath the committee man where it says registered committee man. Your first name will appear there and some basic information and your phone number. But no one will have access to this other than other people running for committee men. But the key point is to be able to find people within your state, and particularly within your county, but also within your state, to organize. As Jan mentioned, we broke the nation up into 10 districts. And we, each one of these districts has four or five or so states. And we will work with the people within those states that are becoming committee men to make sure we're organized, make sure we're all on the same page, we understand what our job is, and what the real true job of the committee man is, and how committees work, how they should be working. Not how they are working, but how they should be working the right way. But we've already written rules. We've already applied rules here in New York State. When I was a committee man, all of the elected committee men came together at a point in time up in Kingston, New York, and we spent the day hammering out the rules to replace the old rules, because the old rules empower the elite, the new rules empower the people. It takes the authority away from the guy with the hammer that thinks he owns the world. Like, you can see what's going on in Congress. You see all that stuff that's going on in Congress today right now with the Democrats? Well, the same very thing happens every day in your own town, in your own county, with the committee men. Same thing. Total control by the powers that be. We need to break that away. Only the people can do that. Donald Trump cannot do that. Donald Trump cannot bring courts of justice back into the courts. Donald Trump cannot force the court system to acknowledge the people and to allow the people to run the process of law. It would be a disaster for people to go do that to begin with if they have not got the knowledge on how to do that and what the processes are. So we need to become educated. We need to step up. We need to volunteer ourselves to become committee men. And those who are looking for a really good career, become an administrator. It's very simple. Go click the buttons and check the box, become a committee man, get your education. Right now the requirement to become an administrator is two courses, our civics course and a government by consent course. And then we are writing a handbook on how things work, and we'll always be here, of course, for questions and answers on how these things work, and, you know, things that might come up that people are unsure how to go forward with. We'll try to work through that to help people out to figure that out. Experience is everything. We do have a lot of experience in the committee man process, and we've got a lot of experience in how things work in the courts now, too. So we like to share that with people, and that's what National Liberty Alliance here is all about. So again, please, everybody, get up there, become a committee man, especially the administrators, but every single person, no matter what your job is and where you are in whatever state and county, become a committee man. If there is a conflict, and I'm sure Carl is listening in, you know, if there's a conflict of your election district, it should show up on your 9-digit zip code. So when you go to sign up for committee man, you'll be applied into your 9-digit zip code. Is it, let me see, 9123456789, yeah, 9 digits. I got to make sure that if someone comes up with hitting up an identical, well, we should see it on the board pretty easily. If two people are coming in the same election district, the only thing you have to do, one of you have to move to the election district next door, which could be just the street to the right or the street to the left of you. It's not a big deal. You must run within your town or within your city, and probably, you know, cities are broken up into also blocks, so you should be running in within the block within your city. There's blocks of election districts. But you can't run in a different county. You can't run in a different town. You need to represent the town that you live in. So, again, all this stuff we'll be teaching people. It's pretty simple. It's not a lot. It's not complex. A lot of it is logical, and we'll lay it out. So I do intend on having these pages up definitely before this year is out to be able to lay out when people run in it in their particular states, as far as filling up, getting your designating petition filled up, walked and filed. There will be lots of people telling you different ways to do it. Don't do it. This is the only way. We have diligently searched this out and worked this out. This is the only way. But the associations will tell you lots of other ways to become committeemen. But trust me, you are not an elected committeeman if you go any other way. Even if you run it the proper way in your own election district and you put the wrong title up there, like member of the county committee, you lost it, because that's a private association. Committeeman is the political position, period. Anything different is something else. So very important that we understand a few little things that we can't make that error with. Defining, and all of this stuff is covered in the process on how to fill out a designating a petition. But just one other little example, though. When you lay out and file the committeeman position, there is a process, a string of I guess you would call it maybe a political subdivision, laying you out, bringing you right in to your election district. For instance, it starts off with your state, and then into your county, then into your town, and then your election district. Of course, there's cities and villages, and all of that has come to play in there also. But we have to be very precise, and we have to be very careful filling out the petitions. And we will always be here for anybody having any questions on filling out petitions once we get going. This is what we're here for. This is what we do on Monday nights. Try to give people information, answer questions, and not only in the courts, but now we're going to be moving over into the committeeman process, so we'll answer questions on that too. So, again, people, we got to do it. You got to do it. Don't think the other guy is going to do it so you don't have to do it, because I can tell you that's not happening. The other guy is thinking the same thing you're thinking. I've seen this for 20 years since I've been involved with this kind of a thing. Thinking, the other guy will do it. Trust me, they're not. It's just a way of life. So we got 8,000 members. We should have a lot of committeemen. Right now we don't. So let me break it down to make it a little more simpler in the sense of how we can take this nation back with the minimum amount. So we can do it with minimum amount. It's just going to be a lot more work on those people, those five people, and for organizing. We have 50 states, okay, and if we have five people in 50 states sign up, that's 250 people. We can take back the nation with 250 people, but it will be a lot of organizing and teaching, with only five people in the state. You'll have to, teach all of the committeemen that are there now that are not elected committeemen, the associate members with the party. We want to bring them in. We can appoint them and guide them and show them. We're going to require them all, in order to be appointed, we want to require them to take this constitutional course, this civics course, and our government by consent course, which does have the Constitution in it. And then we will work with them. Here's the key thing. Every committee has a position, a chair, a leadership, okay? The leadership is made up basically of four people, usually five, but four people, bare minimum four. You have the chair, the co-chair, the secretary, and the treasurer. And then there's a fifth person. You'd like to work with five people. So those five people really can move the whole county. If we can get five people in a county, those five people can handle the organizing, the teaching of other committeemen and in that county a lot easier than five people on a state level. All those counties, here in New York we have 62 counties. So of the 62 counties, There are five on a state level. There is a committee, a state committee, and it's bare minimum of five people. And those five people control the entire state. Right now, it's a dictatorship. Five people down telling all the others how it's going to work. And they got all these little games that they play to make the people think that they actually made a vote to decide who's going. They didn't make no vote. They had total control over it. They already know who's going on the ballot. And that's why we have the problem we have. The people need to take that over, take that back. People need to know that and take that back on the lower level. So, NationalLibertyAlliance.org, highlight committeeman, click on become a committeeman. Everyone needs to do that. We're going to look next week at the numbers to see how much we've grown on the committeemen to become committeemen. Okay, let's see, what else here? Well, I guess Brent's not around, right?
I think he checked in. Either here or Gerard.
Okay. Gerard, are you here yet? I know he was here. I don't think he could talk.
I'm here.
Okay. I'm going to pass it over to you. First, I'm going to introduce Brent. Brent is here, right?
No, that was Gerard I was looking at.
Okay. All right, then. I'm going to pass it over to Gerard now. If Brent comes in, as long as he doesn't come in too late, we'll give him his time. I think he was traveling or something. I know there was something was going on, and he hasn't been around for a couple of weeks now. So, but hopefully he'll be back soon. Gerard, you want to take the controls here, and we'll take our first question?
Sure. It looks like Brent from Wisconsin. Is that our Brent?
No, that's Brett, not
Brett. Oh,
Brett.
Right.
Brett. I thought so, too, at first.
I just sight read it. Okay, Brett, you've been unmuted. Wisconsin, go ahead.
Yes. Is this a open question or forum?
Yeah, if you have a question, you ask it, and we will.
Or a comment, or an idea, or a suggestion. We're open for anything.
Right. Open for anything.
We need all the help we can get.
Except for a bill. We don't want any bills. No, go ahead.
My question has to do with a case that I'm frustrated with. It involves my young daughter. I one day I receive a citation for disorderly conduct, and I just no one will answer my questions unless I go to a hearing.
Yeah.
So
well, what kind of case is it? Is it a case in court? What kind of case is it? What's going on particularly? Without going into too many details, we only need generically the information, and it will maybe help you to find a way to deal with it.
Yeah, I guess something took place at their school, but it was handled at the school level, but then there's a citation for disorderly conduct, and I was questioning as to they wanted a plea of guilty or not guilty, and I was questioning what was behind it and what were all the facts, and no one could give me anything.
Yeah, but is this something that they're asking for the school, or is there a court involved, or what? And is this for you or your child or someone else that was disorderly or what?
Yeah, for child.
Was disorderly in school, and now they're doing something with the court or something?
Yes, but the school isn't related. The school knows nothing about it. I followed up with them, but I was trying to investigate the situation myself. I just had a officer said that I'm supposed to bring my child to court for disorderly conduct.
The last thing you want to do is bring your child to court. You might want to go yourself. Well, how old is your child? Let's put it that way first.
12.
Okay. Yeah, I wouldn't bring my 12-year-old for them to interrogate or talk to or anything. You're going to want to go. Is it a court, like town court or something, or county or what?
Yeah. Yes, a municipal court held at 4 p.m. So it's
same place, maybe where they handle the traffic tickets and stuff. The town or village?
Yeah,
probably town. If it's school, it's town probably. But go ahead.
Yeah, more so in an office in front of a judge.
Yeah, no. Don't bring your child there. Do not bring your child. You should show up though. Write a paper challenging jurisdiction. Let them know they don't have it because they don't have it. You need to get educated though. And at this level, at that where you're working, you want to challenge the jurisdiction. We can help you with filing a particular paper. Which you would file, we can help you. You need to control the narrative of the court. You need to object to everything and make sure that they understand. Listen, you ain't going forward with anything until you show that you have jurisdiction here. And this far, I know you don't have jurisdiction. If you think you have it, well, let's go for it because I just challenged it. Now, they will try to decide that jurisdiction on their own. Okay, they'll try to. The judge will try to say, "Look, I got jurisdiction. That's my order. Let's move forward." You got to object to that. You say, "No, wait a second. Here's one of the most important things. You see, the paper that you're going to file, it's going to be an affidavit form. So you're going to swear to it. And when you file it into the court, it'll be the only sworn affidavit in the court. It'll only be the only one there. A police officer or someone else. They might have a sworn statement, but it won't be notarized, so it's meaningless. It's irrelevant. And generally speaking, I don't think they'll ever notarize it because
who's too risky for them. Is it the police officer? The school doesn't know anything about it. You know, they're not allowed to have any contact.
Yeah, but he's being brought into court.
Yeah, but they had to have contact with the child. Otherwise, the cop has no first-hand knowledge. Somebody made a complaint. They're not allowed to take that child and give it any kind of citation without calling you first.
Right.
He had to be there.
Yeah, but they're bypassing all that. So we got to give him a solution because he's being called into court.
Yeah, but
and he's got to get out of that.
They're not allowed to question or have contact with a child, a minor, without the parent being there.
Well,
the first one called.
But being the fact that he's being pulled into the court, the judge is going to say, look, it doesn't matter. Let's go. Let's move on. We're going to try this thing for whatever it is they're trying to do. And I don't know what they're trying to do here. But the fact that that child is being pulled into the court and telling you to bring that child to court, that is very, very disturbing to me. And I definitely would not bring my 12-year-old. If it was a 17 or an 18-year-old, okay, that's a different story. You know, but I would train them before they went in there. Keep your mouth shut. Let me do the talking. You know.
Well, I did show up to the hearing that they the first one. I did show up there, and they told me I had to bring a child, and they rescheduled it. And if the child didn't show, then they would move forward as guilty.
Okay, look, you have to file. You have to challenge jurisdiction. That's your only hope. You have no other choice, okay? There is nothing else you could do but challenge that jurisdiction. After you challenge the jurisdiction, which will fail, it allows you to move to the next step. But you can't move to the next step until you challenge the jurisdiction, okay? So if you, I'll tell you where you can find a form, and you can alter it a little bit if you want. Definitely fill in your own personal information, but basically it is a paper challenging the jurisdiction. Okay, they do not have jurisdiction over you and your child. They just do not have it. So once you challenge that jurisdiction, the next step's going to happen is the judge is going to decide that he's got jurisdiction. But if you do it properly, you'll be the only affidavit in the court. And then you object again and say, you just shown that you are biased in this case, Your Honor. You just made a ruling. You can't just make this up, Your Honor. You have to look at the facts. You have to look at this side, and you have to look at that side. You only got one side before you. There's only one sworn affidavit. That sworn affidavit rules this court. The other side didn't file an affidavit. Okay? So therefore, you have to dismiss this. All right? Now, they're still not going to do it. And you're going to also want to let them know that, you yourself can't challenge jurisdiction because, first of all, you just proved that you're biased. Second of all, you can't make this decision on your own because you already believe. Okay, this has to go up to a court of record. And the first court of record above that town court is a county court. Okay, so it's got to move up to there for the decision there. And if it does move up to there and they do decide that they have jurisdiction, then that's when you move it to federal court for cause. Okay, and again, there's more paperwork on how to do that. But again, you need to be able to articulate yourself well, and you need to understand the process. And by educating yourself now, of course, you have time, because everything takes like at least a 30-day process as you move through the court. So you have lots of time to educate, but you got to get that paper filed in quickly. The other thing is at another point in time, not right now, but as you move down the road, you can always join your case to ours, and then we can move the case in. But that becomes another problem, because right now they're not recognizing that. And we don't care that they're not recognizing that. At some point, justice will be filled and served, shall I say. And that's just a matter of time. And I don't think it's years. I think it's months. Because when the swamp is drained, and the deep state is removed, there's going to be a power void. And that power void, the power that was there before was protecting these judges, it's not there no more. If the people fill those power voids, and that's what we're trying to teach here, is the people to fill those powers and take control, then the judges no longer have a place to hide, and we can force them to obey the law. We will get into the courts under those conditions. But until that point in time happens, and it looks like it's going to happen in the next weeks, it's really, really here. Anybody listening in, I heard that we're on phase 2 moving into phase 3. And Q said there is no phase 5. So phase 4 is actual arrest and, taking them down. We just moved into phase 3 now. And Q calls it the calm before the storm. So we are in the calm, all right, before the storm. And that storm is about ready to break, especially when Barr starts to release those papers and other things come out. And we move to the Senate with this, this thing trying to get rid of the president. It's going to blow up, and this storm will be, it's going to be a blizzard, the greatest blizzard of all times, politically speaking. So that's what we're waiting for, and after that is when we will take power. But meanwhile, you got to move your process through. So what I can tell you here is this. If you go up to our website, okay, and you click on Abuse of Courts, okay, click on that page, read through that, follow the process, and then you can get into the place where we have all of this information. We have lots of documents and different things you could do. But for right now, even a lawyer is not going to help you, because he's not going to do what's required to be done. Is this a major, major problem, or is it really a minor situation?
Well, that's just it. I don't know, and I'm trying to keep from being caught in a situation that I will have to continue to deal with. It's just officers showed up at my door on a weekend, 2 days in a row, and handed me the citation. And that.
Well, what does the citation say, though?
Disorderly conduct.
Okay. And no details?
No details.
Well, that's the other thing. When you go into the court, you say, first of all, you can't let your child speak. The child is under your rule, under your control, under your protection. God gave that child to you. You don't let the judge know that. And therefore, I am here to speak on behalf of my child. First of all, I have no clue on what this is all about. So why don't we take a break here and let me get all the information, and I will respond back by paper, and then I'll come back. And, tell them you need 60 days or 45 days. The other thing is you could tell them, look, I need to seek counsel. I have no idea what's going on. I want all the information what's going on, and I need time to seek counsel. That doesn't mean you're going to get a lawyer. It means you're going to talk to people to get counsel. You're going to learn. And the judge should say, well, how much time do you need? Go for 45 days. You want to go over 30 days, and I'll tell you why, okay? The reason why you want more than 30 days is because you want to file a paper very quickly. You're going to challenge jurisdiction. 30 days is going to pass. You'll file an affidavit of default, and when you go into the court, you'll say, this case is over, Judge. There's nothing to discuss. They defaulted. Nobody responded back. And we'll show you and tell you who you need to file the other side for, which is really the district attorney for that court. DA, they call them, whatever. They may have some other names. But you find out who is the prosecutor in that court. And they try to hide that, by the way, on the town levels. But you can find them by sending it to the county and put a note on top, hey, I got to presume it's the county DA because there's no other name there. Well, what will happen, because I've done this before, is the county DA will forward it to the town DA or whatever you want to call it. He's just a lawyer hired by the town. He's got a title that's not real anyway. But he'll forward it over to that person, and he'll send you a note letting you know who that person is and that they passed it on to that. You want to file it again to that person also to make sure that you got certified paper, you know, certified mailing that that person got it. And you want to do it properly. You got to get someone that's not connected to the case to do it. You know, you could do it if you got an older child that could do it. You have a friend, a neighbor, your spouse. Well, your spouse can't do it because that's affected by the child also. But any neighbor, friend, or whatever can do the filing. You know, they just have to take it down and mail the paper. That's all. But
look at that. That officer is not playing fair because he's supposed to give him a sworn deposition. Whoever the arresting officer is, he's supposed to give him details of what happened. And if he won't give you a sworn deposition, that's how can you show up at court and not know what the charges are? Even with a traffic ticket, you get to say, they ask you, do you want a sworn deposition? In New York State, they do it on the spot now. They give you the sworn deposition on the spot, and the officer signs it.
But remember, it's not really a sworn affidavit.
I understand, but it's the officer's story. If he's the complaining party, he's got to say what happened, where it happened, how it happened. I mean, technically, she's under arrest. And as a minor, they can't arrest her without her parents being there. I'm telling you, they're not operating even in a normal fashion. Even when they don't have jurisdiction, they give people these things.
Is this your daughter or son? Is that a daughter you're saying, Gerard? Is this daughter
yes,
or son?
Yes, my daughter.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Gerard. Finish.
I mean, there could be extenuating circumstances. Why doesn't he want to tell you what's going on? It sounds like some kind of a vendetta or something.
Have you tried to go down to the police station to get a report and to know specifics?
No, I went to the hearing and I spoke to the actual judge.
They didn't tell you what it was about?
No, the judge couldn't tell me anything. He said he didn't know, and then he handed me some papers that had, I guess, a story about what supposedly happened, and then as I was flipping through, he took the papers from me and told me that there was confidential information about the other people. But he had told me that he didn't know who it was.
All right, you need, like Gerard says, you need to go down and talk to the police. Get that information as soon as possible. Get that paper filed challenging jurisdiction as soon as possible. Go into court. You let the court know you need to seek counsel out, that you need at least 30, 45 days. If you got the paper already filed, you just need 30. But, you know, I would, we'll just leave it that way. But you want to get 30 plus days because you want the other side to default. And once they default, they're not going to be able to beat that. They will try. Believe me, they will try. Okay. And you remember what happened to you, Gerard, when the judge tried to take back control of the case when you already filed your affidavit of default? The time had come and done. And you haven't heard nothing back from them since, right, Gerard?
No, nothing.
Yeah. Same thing. I'm telling you, you could beat it on that. We will give you some thoughts and ideas as you go along, but the first order of business is challenging that jurisdiction, getting the story, challenging the jurisdiction. And then going back into the court the next date and say, I need more time. I'm seeking out counsel. That doesn't mean they're going to think you're looking for a lawyer. Don't say you're looking for a lawyer because you don't want a lawyer. But you're seeking counsel. And counsel is talking to anyone. And then move the paper along. At some point, if you really feel more comfortable with a lawyer, that's fine. But bear in mind, you're going to be in that court. You need to move it before that happens. To begin with, well, I'll tell you right now, once you move it to the county court, which is supposed to be a court of record, they're not even going to hear it.
So I have a couple of questions. Okay, so with the form, the very first time I felt the same thing. I was just frustrated. I felt the same thing when they gave me the citation. So what I did right away, I sent it back to them, and I wrote on there that I didn't consent to the proceedings.
Okay, so well, that's good.
Does that help or hinder anything?
Well, no, it helps. It helps, but it doesn't make the solution. You got to challenge jurisdiction and affidavit form. Listen to this. It sounds like you're totally brand new to all this stuff, but you need to understand that the only thing necessary for a prima facie case is a sworn affidavit. And you could take a pencil and write it on a roll of toilet paper, and it's as good as anything else, as long as it's certified, you know, sworn to in front of a notary. But you have to get that into the court. And whatever that court does, I'm going to tell you right now, that cop is not going to give you a sworn affidavit. There's no one on the other side, because they're brain dead on that end. Remember, they're brain dead when it comes to the truth and law, common law, that is. And so they're not going to come in with it. And then you're going to school the judge. And because the judge is probably a town court, he's probably not even a lawyer, and he ran for election, became a judge, and he really rules the court via through that lawyer that they hire to act as a DA, you know, the actor. And so the actor is really the judge in that court, because he's always turning to that person to get to find out what he should do, unless the judge is a lawyer, you know. But in any event, okay, once you challenge that jurisdiction, you school them with the, and we got everything in the paper to school them with. You learn that paper, look at the footnotes, and make some yellow highlighting on some of the ones that you're going to repeat in front of the judge. But the bottom line is, judge, you, first of all, I challenge jurisdiction. You don't have the ability to decide jurisdiction. It must move up to the next court. Nevertheless, I challenge jurisdiction. The other side didn't respond. I filed an affidavit of default, and this case is over. You need to dismiss it. It's that simple.
So the forms that are on there, those are usable forms to be filed?
All usable forms. You can come back and talk to us if you have any questions on those forms. But, you know, I don't see this case going into the federal court, but, you know, you could move up the line. The federal court, they're not even going to hear this case. But the thing is, because really what you're doing is you're challenging, ultimately you're challenging the jurisdiction. They don't have jurisdiction. It's not a court of record. It's a civil law court. It has nothing to do with you. Okay? You want, if you're saying that a wrong was done, bring me into a court of record. That's my heritage. My right is my heritage, is to have a hearing in a court of record where 12 people hear the story and decide it righteously. And at least if you're in a true court of record, something like this is not going to be something that's going to be attached to your child. So I don't know if they can attach anything to a 12-year-old for life, but they sure will try to mark that child.
So the challenge to the file and jurisdiction challenge, that should be done sooner rather than the day of court, or
you should do that tomorrow if you can get the paper, school yourself, educate yourself with the information on those pages. Come back next Monday if you have to ask us more questions after you've, you know, examined everything, and you know, it's a very simple thing. And again, remember, you're in jurisdictions unknown. They're operating under civil law. Civil law has nothing to do with you.
Okay, because the hearing is next Monday, and okay. So they moved it to next Monday. So,
First of all, get down to the police station, and get the papers. As Gerard says, you should be able to get this stuff. Understand what's really going on. Okay, fill out your papers, get it ready to file. Okay, since it's so close, you got a week to prepare it. You go into court. And you say, look, I'm just getting information on you. I was here once before. I didn't walk out of here with information. I finally now got some information from the police officer here, and now I'm here back into this courtroom. I need at least 40 days. Let's say 45 days. Let me think. Say five to 6 weeks. Okay. I need some time. I need 5 or 6 weeks. First of all, you just tell me you need time to get counsel. The judge is then going to ask you, and if he doesn't ask you, then you tell him, how much time do you need? You want 6 weeks, okay? When you leave that courtroom the next morning, that paper should be on its way filing. You want to get 30 days to get in before you get back into that court, if possible, okay? And so when you get into the court, you'll not only have filed that paper, you'll also file an affidavit of default, and it'll be filed in that court, and you'll go into the court to shut it down. Then if they don't, you move it up to the state court for cause, because they're disobeying the law. And you could do that for seeking a, you could just seek that through the process itself, seek the a writ mandamus from the upper court to command that court to obey the law. We can help you a little bit with that, but again, you know, you got to be a learner now. You got to really be a quick learner and start really educating yourself on this. We should all know these things. Okay? So do that, and, you know, in order to get, when you read through this page, though, and you come down and it says click here to not only fill out for the joinder, but to get the information. Hold on one minute. Let me see where that's at. Abusive courts, make sure you're logged in. If you're logged in, turn your window. Okay, click here for instructions to join an open forum. Okay. Yeah, when you click on fill out the joinder, oh, that's for an intake form. Goodness, I'm not sure. We may have moved this.
Yeah, I ran into that too. I was looking for the form and it was.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get a. You know what I'll do? Try to get a page up here underneath abusive courts that also gives you access, because it used to be access, but now it goes straight to the joinder form. Click here to sign up for government. Click here to do okay, kind of course. And
Now, with this form, would I be reading it off in court in front of the
judge? Oh, no. You're going to file it in paper. It'll show you exactly how to do that. During this week, I will get it up there. If you don't see it up there, you can give a call to Jan, and Jan will connect you with me on the phone, and I'll get this stuff to you. But I'm going to try to do it tomorrow or the next day to get it up there. I'm going to put in here a page to give you access to our paperwork, that forms and different things. And wait, remember, look here. Government consent course. Goodness, I don't know where we moved it to. Because, you know, Carl worked out to create a form for us, and I guess it used to go to that page, and then off of that page should have gone to a form. I'll fix that. I'll find that out. Okay?
Okay.
So look for it. It'll be on the abusive court page where you'll be able to click to go in there. Now, in order to get access to this stuff, you know, this is the only place where we ask people to become premier members. And a premier member is someone who is a member, of course, that's given $5 a month or more. And so we ask everyone for $5 a month to support what we're doing. So to get in here to do that and for the joinder, you know, and to education on the consent by government course, we ask people to be premier members. But I will get that up there within the next 48 hours, let's say. If you don't see it, get a hold of Jan. And Jan will find me, and we'll see what we'll do at that point. But okay.
Okay. So one more thing. So is it better not to go in to court after filing, or is it better?
Oh no, you still got to go. You shouldn't have to go, but these courts, they don't even know how things work. So, you know, you got to go. Okay. Don't not go. You'll acquiesce to them. Okay.
But do. So I don't have to take my daughter. They can't do anything to me for not bringing her.
I would not bring my 12-year-old child into a courtroom for them to be. You have no idea what they're going to think, do, or say. You don't know. I'm not subjecting my 12-year-old child to this situation until I know what's going on and I get counsel. Until then, you have no access to my child. I'd be very, very blunt about that in a polite way, of course. You know, I'd be very blunt.
Okay, yeah, because that seem odd to me.
Yes, I've never even heard of this before. They're strange. Things are getting stranger. All this will be gone soon.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
25 minutes, thanks. We got to move along.
Thank you.
All righty.
Bunch of people here.
I think Brent is here.
You see him?
I don't see him.
You don't see him? Okay. All right. Move on, Gerard.
Okay. Craig from Arizona, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah. This is Greg. I'm trying to figure out how to resolve an issue with the I do patent law, and there's an issue I need to resolve with the administrative law judge in D.C. And it sounds like from what you're saying, I need to challenge jurisdiction on that.
Any
do you know anything about
law,
that? Or?
Look, I didn't hear the first part. You said you're trying to what law? What?
Excuse me. Before, hold on 1 minute before we continue this call. I did for the last caller there. I did find the page where you can get to the forms. If you go to education, highlight education on our blue bar, and you come down to court forms, process, and instructions. You want to really start educating yourself there on this page. Everything on this page. We got a lot of stuff here, and start educating yourself. Come here on Monday nights, ask questions, and make sure you don't acquiesce to that court. Okay, we'll take the next caller now.
Now, this guy has an administrative law judge out of D.C., did you say?
Yeah. So I'm kind of wondering, do you guys know? I mean, are these administrative law courts, are they real courts? Are they corporations?
Well, the key to that is administrative.
Right.
Okay, yeah. So,
well,
I mean,
real courts. They'll put you in jail. They don't care. But they're operating outside of, you know.
You want to know how it is that they think that you need to be there. You know, you're administrative. What is your jurisdiction? You want to ask that question first.
Mean, what ABC thing is he with DEC or what? What administrative court? What's the nature of the?
It's a HUD. It says HUD on it.
Okay, so it's Housing and Development HUD. Okay,
yeah,
so.
But it's from the Patent and Trademark Office.
Yeah,
so
they do some strange stuff. Go ahead.
I mean, do you know the nature of the Patent and Trademark Office by chance? Is that a corporation?
I
mean,
did
they?
They're pulling there the Patent and Trademark. I just know that they're very corrupt.
I've been dealing with them for years.
I don't know how HUD gets involved in the Patent and Trademark Office, but, you know, like John says, we're in jurisdictions unknown. They play in games, so.
Bizarre.
I mean, you don't have any idea the nature of the thing, or I mean, it's.
They're calling you into this court?
Yeah. I'm in Arizona.
And what is the violation that they're claiming? Oh, you know, what are they saying?
Someone filed a complaint about me through the patent office.
Okay. Have you have any dealings with the patent office?
Yeah.
What kind of dealings?
Well, I'm a registered patent agent, and a client was refusing to pay money, so I stopped work for them. And then
To the patent. Now you are under there. If you're registered, you're in the administrative process. You got to go and deal with them, because remember you signed up. So yeah, let me explain a little story I had a while back before I had knowledge. Okay, I never participated with the process of unemployment and all that process when I had people working for me, but I never paid in, never participated. I had a problem with an individual who worked for me, and then they went to try to collect unemployment, which I wasn't participating with any of that. All the people who worked for me knew we didn't participate. They got all their money straightforward, no taxes or anything. And they did whatever they wanted to do. If they wanted to file, or that's their business. So when they pulled me in there, they tried to, take control over me, telling me that I had to participate, so on and so forth. And I said, I never signed up for this. This is all unconstitutional to begin with, and I have never signed up for any of this, so you have no authority over me. And that was my battle with them. I didn't have knowledge of the courts and how things work, and I went to their stupid hearings, and I should have done different. I should have challenged the jurisdiction and did all kinds, but I didn't know those things. So I went through that process. I was pulled 2, 3, or 4 times, by the time I got to the end of this thing, you know, the judge was coming near retirement, he never made a decision. And like 9 months later, some other judge came in, took his place, and he made a decision. And the decision didn't go on my side. And they tried to get, I don't know how many thousands of dollars off me, and I told them to take a hike, and nobody chased me for it because, you see, they didn't really have authority or power over me.
Understood.
But you are signed into the game. okay?
Okay.
You're a registered individual under that process. So you need to go learn the administrative process and understand. Now, you build a case. It sounds like you have a righteous case. They didn't pay, and you didn't continue forward with it. What are you going to do?
Right.
There's nothing else. That's the way it is, you know?
Yeah.
A contract agreement, and even with a patent office or something, or you are an individual that works through the patent office as far as bringing the patents to the office and putting them into place for them, because people don't know how to do that. That's what you do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, if they're not paying you, then you don't have to work.
Okay, well,
Go read the rules on that. There's codes on that in there. It's regulation, they call it. This is not a criminal thing. The only thing, the worst case that can happen to you is to complete a job that you didn't complete, even though they didn't pay you. But I don't see how they can force you to do that. Because you can say to the administrative judge, are you going to pay me? I want to tell you something about administrative courts. I was very, very, very unruly in that court. I was beside myself because they kept just trampling all over me, and I started reading the Constitution. I already was starting to read the Constitution, and they would just beat me up in ways that they shouldn't be doing. And I literally blew up in the courtroom on more than one occasion where the administrative judge, you know, had to stop the proceedings and say, we're putting this off till next month. Everybody out of here. But that showed me what a paper tiger they were. Okay?
Gotcha.
So
I kind of want to delay this so I can challenge jurisdiction just to buy more time. So I can figure out what
to do. You can't really, because you're governed by that administration. You could tell them that you're not ready to proceed and that you need more time. And you go get, you know, you should know where to get the rules and the regulations as control.
Yeah. Right.
And go through that. You know, when I was a general contractor, okay? And there's the American, goodness, what is it? Well, it's the General Contractors Association and the Architects Association. They came together and created a really nice contract. And so you can run under those. I ran under those rules and laws. So every contract I ever had with a person referred to those, and I always gave the people a copy of that contract. And it brought them into how things are going to break up, how things work. And I studied that from one end to the other. I knew it by heart, you know, what I had to do and what they had to do. I had to do the work and they had to pay. That was really the bottom line.
Right.
But, you know, if someone breaks this rule or something, and this is how this is going to be handled. Everything's already worked out on how things are going to be handled. You're going into a court that everything's worked out on how things are going to be handled. Go read that paper and learn it.
Okay.
Because that's your business. That's what you're doing. Get to know and understand so next time you know exactly what to do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, do you know, I mean, am I dealing with a corporation here, or is it a legitimate government, or what did they do in D.C.?
Oh, no, this is a government agency, the HUD. It's the HUD agency, right?
Okay.
Yeah, this is a government agency. It's not a corporation. And again, they have no authority over me, but they do over you because you're registered in the game.
Okay. Interesting.
And it should work out good for you. You know, I used to argue cases on a site because I did construction management for a large court.
You there?
Usually if there's an architect on site, he gets to do the judging. So you bring your case before the architect and you argue it out, and he or she makes the ruling. And then you go, it's an arbitrational process, you know, you agreed to it in the contract. And and once that's done, it's done, it's over. But when I went in and made an argument, sometimes I'm right and sometimes I'm wrong. And, you know, I admit to both sides, and, you know, And that, of course, shows good faith, especially to the person judging that. So I would hold my positions on where this other side is wrong, and we need to be paid for this. And then we'd have to admit, though, if we made a mistake somewhere, that, okay, we got to eat that one, but they got to eat this one, you know.
Okay.
And so go in and take care of the case that way, and it should be a just situation. These people aren't generally evil per se. You know, there's no, you know, it's just someone they don't know here and they don't know you and you're coming in and there's really no true bias there.
Okay.
Unless they know the person.
Yeah, you know? Gotcha. Okay. Okay, so you're right. Telling me that it's a legitimate agency, the patent office is a
for you,
legitimate
it is, yes.
agency. And Oh, yeah. you mean, okay.
Well, hold on. Let me think about this.
Is there a DUNS number? I saw that on your website.
I'm just wondering why HUD would be taken on for, what, like Gerard had mentioned, now that I think about it, why is HUD taking on this process?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean...
That's what you got to find out.
It seems like there's something weird going on. And like you
for
said,
you,
I don't trust these people.
There is a government agency that governs what you do. And there should be an administrative process for that. This, I don't know how that's working out with HUD. Is this a HUD issue, though? No, this is just a...
No, it's patent office.
Yeah, you need to go find that out. I would, you know, you can go pay the court a visit, which is best than calling them up, and speak to one of the administrators there, one of the, you know, whoever's got the authority down there, an administrator. And ask them, why is it that I'm being pulled here? How am I governed here?
It almost sounds to me like the patent office is using the HUD court to hold court. Because it's an administrative court. Look, they could do it anywhere.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There may be something that's to that. Yeah,
they might agreement. They might have an agreement with HUD. I don't know what the deal is there.
Hey, when you find out, let us know on some future Monday on what that was all about and how that
Yeah, definitely.
I'm kind
of
interested.
Yeah.
Right?
So I signed up the other day to pay $20 a month because I like your site. And I heard you on Patriot Soapbox. So.
Oh, great. Thanks.
So, I mean, that's just great information there. So, okay, I'll see if I can find out, and I'll definitely let you know. So, I might just challenge jurisdiction anyway.
Well, first find out if they have it. First, find out if they have it.
Well, he doesn't have a contract with HUD. He has a contract with the patent office.
Yeah, but like you say, there must be something here in the game that connected them. I don't know. You need to go find out. You need to ask the administrator. Say, look, I'm with the the patent office. You with the housing authority. How do you have jurisdiction over me? How can I understand this? You know, just be polite and nice. How am I going to understand this? If they can't tell you the answer to that, then challenge it. But search out also what your governing body is. Because, again, being a patent officer, you are under a government, umbrella there of control. And you got to find out what that is. Go find that and then go speak to those people. And then you can come back next week and talk to us some more. If you give us those two pieces of information, maybe we can give you some advice.
Okay. Okay, sounds good. I'll be here. So.
I just want to tell you another thing on that.
Sure.
American Intelligence Media, with that husband and wife team, they talk about the patent office, how they've been stealing everybody's patent and selling it to China. And their advice was don't file any patents with the patent office until they get straightened out.
Yeah, they're just evil. They just do whatever they want. They don't even follow their own statutes and regulations. They rewrite them, and then they expect you to follow the rewritten version.
Right.
And when you complain, they just say, "Well, sue us." So.
Yeah,
well, then you got to sue them.
Yeah. Well, then I mean, it's a lot of money. So.
And
well, that's true.
Who knows what kind of smoke screen they're throwing up by using HUD too? That this could be another game that they're playing. But I mean,
they're always up to something. Yeah.
Well, look,
she gave quite a bit of information on that. You know what they were doing.
Okay.
But anyway,
look, you can sue them, and it is true that it will cost quite a bit of money because you need to get a lawyer. But In 60 to 90 days, you can create a situation for yourself where you don't need a lawyer no more. You can come learn on our site. You will learn on our site everything you really need to know in order to file a paper or anything. You know, we read the paper that we wrote and read tonight, and a copy of that is up on our website under education. And one of the things is mentioned, and we can sue an inferior court directly. So, right now, we the people, are suing the United States Supreme Court, and we have an unalienable right, we have an authority to do that because we are the superior court. The court of justice, a court of law, is superior to any equity court, any equity court.
Yeah.
And
right.
The United States Supreme Court is an equity court.
Right. Interesting. Do you know the status of Ginsburg?
No, we're wondering.
Dead,
wondering.
Alive, sick, or?
I don't know. They're not saying.
Yeah, it's very fishy. I follow Q also, so I'm up to speed and all that stuff. So, okay. Well,
right.
You're a great help. I really appreciate it, and I'm sure other people have questions. So I don't want to take up all your time. So.
All right. Appreciate the call.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. We'll move to the next caller. That's Barbara from New York. Go ahead. You've been unmuted, Barbara.
Hi, thanks. I had a question about the Fifth Amendment. I wanted to try to understand the meaning because I realized that there were a lot of parts to the Fifth Amendment and the Sixth Amendment, and I thought, you know, it's kind of hard to remember. I'm gonna look for overarching theme for both of them, and then I realized that the Fifth Amendment was like five phrases all attached in one sentence, and starting out with in the case of a capital or infamous crime, and the,
Let me read it for you, Gerard. You want to read
okay.
it? No, go ahead. I'm not
right.
there.
Let me read the Fifth Amendment for you. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on the presentation or indictment of a grand jury. So the big question is what is an infamous crime? Okay, an infamous crime is any crime that requires a jail sentence or that could end up with a jail sentence. That's an infamous crime. So if you're in danger of going to jail, that's an infamous crime. And therefore, like you go to these town courts, maybe people have some marijuana or something, or they're driving without a license and they throw them in jail for 3 months or whatever they want. Well, that's unlawful because they can't do that without an indictment from a grand jury. Now, what was his name? Justice Bork. Okay, he was nominated to become a Supreme Court justice, I believe, through Reagan. Okay, and he's supposed to have been a really heavy hitter for the Constitution, and he didn't make it. But one of the things he had written was that that 90 or 80% of the people that are in jail are there only because they opened their mouth. In other words, they gave them jurisdiction. Instead of denying the jurisdiction, they gave him the jurisdiction. They participated. They jumped into the sandbox and played. Okay? So that's a thing you got to be careful of. If it's getting a jail sentence, you better go out and get a grand jury to indict me before you try to take me into this court. So that's what that's for. Yeah. It goes on. It goes on.
Yeah.
And it says, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces, or the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger. Now, here's the second part now. So, and that doesn't apply to you, that other part, because you're not in the service. Nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy. And so they can't go out and get an indictment and bring you through a court of law and they lose and then bring you back again. Now, they do that a lot when they get a hung jury. Okay, if they get a hung jury, what do? They retry you. That's double jeopardy. No, juries cannot. That jury, the liberty of that jury to go home, okay, is a forfeited situation until they come in and figure out a decision. And if they can't come up to a decision, they have to let the person go. Okay. So, so that's what that means there. So twice put in jeopardy of life or limb. Nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to witness against himself or herself. So they can't force you to be a witness. The IRS does this all the time. They try to force you to be a witness against yourself. But a lot of places do that too. So, you know, you got a right to be silent. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Due process of law is a court of law. Therefore, you need an indictment if you're going to do a criminal thing, okay? Uh-huh. And not only do you need an indictment, I'm going to go to a court. That court has to be set up not under civil law, but under common law. So you can challenge the jurisdictions if it's not under common law because that's jurisdictions unknown, all right? And so that's pretty much, let's see what else it says here.
Okay. And
deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Okay, and now that's an abused one there.
That's
taken for public use doesn't mean that some large corporation that'll raise the tax base of that town or whatever to be given that property to be taken away and, in order for the town or whatever to get a higher tax base, payment off of that because there's corporations moving in and all that. No. This is for something like highways and railways and things of that nature, things where it's not kind of necessary and there's no other way to get through. And then they have to compensate you. So that's about the only time. But that's it for the Fifth Amendment,
the
due process.
It seems like it's one sentence. There's only one period. And it seems like, there's one meaning. There's one overriding meaning, which seems to be when there's some suspicion that you've done something that's, a serious crime. How do you limit all that harm to yourself in various ways? And I would guess that in the past, in Old England, if someone wanted your property, you'd be accused of a crime. And so that really...
Well, it ended with a semicolon on that. Everything else is separated by commas. Now, I'm not a big English person, so please don't take my advice on the English. But I can see how all this is connected until they said, nor shall private property be taken without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. But I see how you're saying you're tying into a criminal act really there's other things. You could be brought into court and it doesn't necessarily have to be a criminal act. They do this with non-judicial foreclosures. Believe it or not, you do end up in court even with a non-judicial foreclosure where the judge makes no ruling and signs no papers and puts no seal. Okay? But nevertheless, they're doing this all unlawfully.
They say that you can't be, I read somewhere, you really cannot be deprived of any of the basic inalienable rights unless you put yourself in a position of doing harm to someone. So to remove property because somebody...
No. Even if they accuse you of doing harm to someone, you still have the right of due process. You have the right of a grand jury, right of a trial jury.
But
that's what the Fifth Amendment is all about.
But why does taking land away from you because they need a place for the railroad tracks or a shopping mall, why is that in the Fifth Amendment? The Fifth Amendment begins with, in cases of, a capital crime, someone's done nothing. How do you fit that in to this sentence? I just saw the Bednarik, episode.
Michael Bednarik,
He said, used to be there was a bill of attainder and they take away the property when you there was a capital or heinous crime, your children and your descendants wouldn't get any of your property. And he said, well, we decided the bill of attainder was not acceptable, but we replaced it with eminent domain. He said, you can't replace bill of attainment with eminent domain.
Right.
So he seemed to be saying that this the taking away property under the Fifth Amendment is really not what was intended.
Let me just make one little comment here, and that is on this. When you read through it, it does seem to be all connected. It does seem to be appropriate until you get to that last sentence, as you say, part of a sentence where it talks about, here's where you're having the problem. Nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. That's the problem you have right there, right?
Yeah, because it doesn't connect to
I wouldn't disagree with that. Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. They stuck it into the Fifth Amendment. Why did they stick it into the Amendment 5? We'd have to go back and find the debate and the arguments over that. And you might find those answers in... the anti-federalist papers. So you might want to go look at that. And, you know, we've got a PDF uh-huh. copy of that, and we also have an audio copy of that. You can go through it with the audio. But you can also take the PDF copy and do some word searches to find it, do property and or something like that. And then you can go okay. read all the places, talks about property, and see once if they discuss that issue. Everything else does seem appropriate, but maybe the reason they put it there, because it says it brings it up and it kind of brings it into an introduction almost, I think, possibly, where it says, for instance, just going to read a couple of lines up, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, comma, nor be deprived yeah. of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Oh, by the way, you can be deprived without this whole process. Nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. They can do this without going to a court, in the sense they could do it. There's a legal process for them to do this, and it could end up in court where you can make the argument, but the court should rule against you unless they're doing it in order to raise their economic base. In other words, there was a case, and I think this is the one, I think Michael talked about this one. There was a case where people came in and they wanted to take this property away from a person because they wanted to build some mall or some big thing that's going to bring money into the town, and so they went to court, and the court ruled on the side of the corporation, and then the corporation took control of the property, and some years later they still didn't do anything with that property. They didn't even build. And maybe they decided at some point maybe it's not economically feasible for us to build our whatever they were going to build there. I don't know. But the person did lose their property. That was unjust. That was unlawful. And that was a corrupt court. Because you can't take property for that purpose. The purpose has to be for the public use, for the public purpose of use. That means a highway, a railway, or something that needs to be done, okay? But then the person has to be well compensated.
Well, you know, in California, I mean, the whole horrible mess in California, that they got a foothold with Eminent and Obain. I mean, they wanted to build this railroad. The people said, and they offered them a price, people who were buying it, I guess, through the government, and the people said, no, you know. And so what happened? The state is like...
Well, that you know, the final result to that could be dealt with in a court. If the person is just feeling that they're not being well compensated for that, then they just have to get the statistics, the information necessary to prove that, bring it into the court and say, hey, look, these people want to give me, I'm just going to throw out a number. These people want to give me $100,000, but look at here. This is worth $400,000 or $500,000. Plus, on top of that, you know, I love it where I'm at right now. Maybe it's your house is on there. I love it where I'm at right now. It really is hurting me to move, but I understand, you know, there's a law involved here. Compensation is not just a value of what you see, you know, that the real estate would be, but also the fact that there is something in that personally affects you and almost injures you, and you have to be compensated for that. Depression, or however words we want to use to describe that, and you can make a case in court and be able to win that, I would think, if you're in a real court, a court where a judge really is going to, you know, proceed with justice. And remember, because this is over $20, you can take it right to the people. I want a court of justice. I'm not interested in a political animal with a cape and a hammer sitting up there on a high table there. I want the people that are sitting at the level where I'm level right over here, the 12 people who are my neighbors. People who understand our community, I want those, the people in a court of justice, common law, to make a decision.
Yeah. I still think that the way they slip this in, you know, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation, they're clearly making it a part of the previous phrase, which it has everything.
Yeah, but bear in mind,
committing a crime.
Bear in mind, a lot of property was, especially in the beginning of our nation, a lot of property people didn't pay anybody anything for it. They go settled on it and put a stake up, registered, and took it. Okay, so they got it for free to some degree. And especially as you move further out west, those things are bigger. So now you've got all this property and you need a highway to go out, but you got to go 50 miles to the north to run 50 miles over to the west, and then 50 miles back south to get back over to go further out to the west. You know, you got mountains to work with, and maybe they got to somehow go through a mountain if they don't go through this property. You know, there's a lot of logical reasons. So there's a handshake here in that when you really think about it.
Yeah, but you know, all this Agenda 21 urban planning stuff, I wouldn't feel like that.
That's a whole different story. Agenda 21 is totally unlawful and will disappear the moment that the deep state is gone. That's going with it.
Yeah.
Agenda 21 will be no more. It's only a matter of time.
Really?
Oh absolutely. So absolutely. No doubt. I would say sometime next year, Agenda 21 will be a thing of the past. And I say that only because the storm is coming. We're at the calm of the storm, before the storm. The storm is coming, and this is going to end. That storm is going to end sometime next year. And during that process, as that's going through the judicial process to deal with all of these criminals, then the courts will be open for people to take the power and the authority back. And that's what we need to do. When we do that, Agenda 21 across the board will be shut right down for numerous reasons. It's repugnant. Everything they're doing is repugnant.
Absolutely. I actually got a letter from some American who was on some UN committee, and he said the U.S. is in arrears in their payment to the United Nations and their agencies, and we need, please write your congressman to tell them they need to pay. And I was thinking, you're telling me, and then they said they were having trouble, that they didn't have, you know, the funds they used to have, and I was thinking, you could go bankrupt. I mean, maybe that's one of the ways they just don't have the money anymore to do what they're doing. So that sounds wonderful.
Yeah, well, again, there is kind of a handshake here. And remember, our founding fathers really struggled to work this out, and I don't have a problem with it. Again, as long as it's not abused, I understand that the public need is the public need, and so a strip of your land might be broken through where they put an easement or something through and take control of that or whatever. You know, I know, it could be a burden to some people. Let's say it goes right through a farm. So if they can't go around the farm and they got to go right through the farm, then they have to do something in that process to create a situation where maybe there's animals that need to be able to have both sides, so they have to have crossings and you think bridges or something. I don't know. This is an argument that could be made in the court, and part of the process.
Sure.
And again, you do it to the people because the people will understand better than any political animal with a cape, a hammer, and a high seat, you know?
A
judge.
Involved in, Okay.
All right, we should take the next caller, though.
Thanks a lot.
Appreciate it.
Hello?
Yeah, go right ahead. Gerard, you here?
Yeah, I want to ask about the civil case. I'm telling you right now, by listening to y'all, I'm a committee man. I want to become a committee man because where I live, they broke so many laws, so that they making me got to stand up for the people.
Sign up, and we'll teach you.
Okay, so I really want to find out. It's Title 28, USC 1361 says you can file an action to make federal officials to do their job. So can you explain that to me a little bit?
Again, on U.S. Title 28, what?
Title 28, U.S.C. 1361. So you can file an action.
Did you say 1361?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
It says you can file an action to make federal officials to do their job.
Absolutely. But you know, these codes, some of these codes are written for the people, and that certainly is one of them. Okay, and we do use some codes, because remember, the codes apply to those people. It applies to our government officials. And when our government officials aren't doing their job and doing something that affects us and you or me or a bunch of people in a negative way, you could take that into the courts, and you can require that individual to be obedient to that. And if you did that, and if the court were to find the other way, you can then look at first. You can then open up a court of record, you know, require a tribunal. And
okay, I'm gonna tell y'all what happened to my wife and I down here. My wife became executive over her grandma's estate, and so she needed the tax because the judge told her. Now he said, when you become the representative of your grandma, he said, don't try to pay the taxes on all this land by yourself. So okay, she said didn't, but it was an old truck on the land. What the grandma had on the land to sell. And so she said, well, judge, I need to sell the truck so I can pay the tax on it. He said, I don't blame you. He said, I fill out all the kind of paper that you need to pay the tax. So we've done that. So we went and sold the truck. And about 2 days later, he called back and said, if y'all don't get that truck back on that land, I'm going to have y'all arrested and locked up. And so we said, no, we didn't sold the truck. He said, well, you get that money up here. He said, you get that money up here, and if you don't have that money up here by a certain time, you're going to have you arrested and locked up. So we took the money up there to him and everything, and to make a long story short, he turned around and gave the heirs everybody $10 in 1980. He gave all of them $10, and he took the rest of the money and put it in his pocket, which was $225 from Larry, put it in his pocket. And we were saying, we know, we went and had him summoned, so they counsel. We went to the council and had him counsel. So now that we want to take to the process, we want to take it to another level that we ready to suit, because we want to bring a civil case with them and a whole lot of people that involved with it. So that's why I said we want to, like, we got a long list of law that they have broken.
Well, I'm not sure I understand what exactly you're talking about. Are you saying that you sold a truck that was on a property, and right, a person whose property it was said you can do that, right?
Right, right. The judge gave us all.
But the person who owns the property says, yeah, you can get rid of that truck, and so you take that truck and you sell it, and now they want money. They turn around and want money, right?
Yeah, the other family got complaining about it. They went to the judge, started complaining about death threats and all kind of things were going to happen. So I guess that's when the judge turned around and told us we need to get that truck back there.
Yeah, again, you know, you should have gotten something on contract. I mean, and that's the key thing to that. And you have no papers, and unless you have witnesses to the agreements and stuff, and then you have affidavits. You might be able to win the case by just doing an affidavit and filing in the court. And the end of the day, you could move them for default because they didn't respond back with an affidavit. Usually they'll respond back through a lawyer, and the lawyer filters an affidavit. He makes the affidavit, but he's secondhand news. He has no firsthand knowledge, so his affidavit really is irrelevant. He's just trying, and it's just something they created in the system just to create more problems and to protect for the lawyers to protect their people so that they can lie a lot, you know, because, there is no, you know, only first-hand people involved can do an affidavit. But if you're in a court and you're the only one with an affidavit, at the end of the day, hey, Your Honor, you have no choice but to rule towards me because an affidavit rules the court. And I'm the only one here with an affidavit, therefore my wherefore clause sticks. And you could do an affidavit. Well, I don't know if you could do an affidavit default at that point, but the bottom line is that judge, if he's ready to make the ruling, he needs to rule your way. If he doesn't, then you could take it through the system. And again, you know, it's not a big enough case to, it is over $20, but, you know, it's not really a big enough case that you'd want to go through a jury and go through that stuff. But that's about all the advice I think we can give. I don't know, Gerard, do you have anything on that?
I wanted to
No.
My wife got some. She probably want to go ahead on the air to it. Because, like I said, I'm going to get on the phone tomorrow. I'm going to sign up to be a committee man. Because too much then went on, in which I know that I can be a help to the people around here.
Well, again, we can hold their feet. The committee men can hold these elected and appointed people to the feet to the fire, okay? Remember, anybody with authority out there, you know, every agency has numerous authority, people with authority, but it all starts off with someone appointed to be commissioner of some kind, someone to control a particular agency or whatever. Well, those people are usually appointed, okay? And they're usually appointed by someone that's elected that has that's been given the power or the authority to make the appointment. The president appoints a lot of people, you know? But other people, there are some people that will appoint different people because that's part of their job as an elected person. And when a person that's appointed is doing the wrong thing, you go after the person who appointed them. It's their job to bring them under control and under the law. And if they don't, then you go after both of them. You bring them into a court of law, and you apply the rules and regulations that they have to live under. And you've already understood some of this already in USC 28. So that's what you apply to them, and you move that judge, you move that court for that decision to do the proper thing. And again, you know, the big problem is the judge is probably going to lean towards the powers that be because it's advantageous for them, their career and movement and a whole bunch of other things, you know, to rule that way. So they rule status quo. And big corporations, they'll rule status quo. But if the big corporations aren't involved in your case and the government isn't involved in your case and you're in court, there is a possibility that justice could be found there, but usually not.
No.
But anyway, that's become a committeeman. That's a good thing. And hold these people's feet to the fire. Pull them out of office when they don't do the right thing. Of course, you've got to work with the other committeemen and convince other committeemen to work with you to pull this guy out.
Right.
And if it's a really, if you got a good case and you bring it to the other committeemen and they agree with you, then now you got the power to do it.
Okay. All right.
But we got to take our next caller. Okay?
Okay. The next caller is area code of 317, no name. So give us your name, first name, and the state. Go ahead, you've been unmuted.
You're a little far from your mic, Gerard. Can you get a little closer?
Okay, how's that?
Oh, that's better.
Okay, this is Brent. This is Brent.
Brent L. Winters?
Yeah. This is how I get in. I hope I'm not too late. I've been on the whole call, and you were asking about me, but I couldn't say anything. You know.
Ah, don't you have the admin access? Give a call to Jan.
Okay.
And have him help you set it up.
All right. Somebody text me Jan's number. I don't think I have it.
Well,
you'll
find them under our, if you go out to nationallibertyalliance.org and you go to directory, click on the directory.
Okay.
When you get there, you'll find him on the top, his email and his phone number.
All right.
Right there, National Director Jan. Okay?
All right.
Get a hold of him, have him set you up with the administrative controls. I thought you had them. And this way, you don't need anyone to unmute you.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and send you that in the morning, Brent.
Thank you, Jan.
Yeah.
You want to take 10 minutes?
Oh, if you want to give it to me, I'll take it.
Yeah, take 10 minutes, and then we'll see if we can get the rest of the people after that.
All right. So it's 8:34. I'll try to watch the clock pull me off if I go too long.
Yeah. We'll get the hook out there for you.
All right. It's this is the Constitution.
Oh, well, let me introduce you. Hold on a minute.
Okay.
This is Brent Allen Winters. He's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. Great, great book. And he's also have a website, commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic.
Thank you. We've been going through the Constitution of the United States clause by clause and blow by bloody blow. And we've gotten all the way now to Article 2, Section 1, Clause 6. I believe that's where we left off. I've been gone for a few weeks. But it says this, in the case of removal of the president from office or of his death, resignation,
or inability to discharge the powers and duties of the said office, the same shall devolve upon the Vice President, and the Congress may by law provide for the case of removal, death, resignation, or inability, both of the President and the Vice President, declaring what officer shall then act as President, and such officer shall act accordingly until the disability be removed, or a President shall be elected. That was a lot of words all piled up there. Let's see if we can unscrew the unscrutable. The Amendment 25 modifies this clause for good reason. And here's how it kind of happened. In the year 1919, President Woodrow Wilson suffered a stroke, became incompetent, bedridden, and desperate. Some people called it the stroke. How'd they put it? Well, maybe I'll come to it later. Anyway, he suffered this stroke, and he was out of commission entirely. And unbeknownst to the country, Mrs. Wilson became the unelected president. In fact, and I'm going to quote an historian here, a Brit who wrote a long book on the subject. His name was Johnson. He didn't write it too many years ago. Oh, 10, 15 years ago, 15 probably. He said this about what happened when President Wilson had his stroke. He said, President Wilson's private secretary, Joseph Tumulty, conspired with Wilson and his wife, Edith, to make her president of the United States, which she remained for 17 months. During this bizarre episode, Mrs. Wilson wrote orders, sacked and appointed cabinet members, and forged Woodrow Wilson's signature on congressional bills. On the other hand, because President Wilson's stroke rendered him unable to interfere, the country's economic recovery was rapid. Though otherwise calloused, some economists have dubbed Woodrow Wilson's illness the stroke of luck. Saved the country, they said, from economic collapse because his policies were destroying us. President Nixon, on the 9th of August, 1974, which would have been about 50 years later, thereabouts, resigned as chief executive. Vice President Ford succeeded him. Until then, only death had ever cut short the term of a United States president. That was the first time one had resigned. And Amendment 25, which I had mentioned before, requires that the vice president succeed the president that becomes disabled, and specifies the conditions applying to such train of events. In other words, the wives of president are not allowed to be president and serve as president in any capacity, which has happened very recently. I don't think it's beyond facts at all that Bill Clinton didn't have a clue what he was doing. His wife was running the White House and the presidency. He was partying and having fun, bedding girls like he'd been doing for the last 20 years. Section 1, Clause 7. The president shall at stated times receive for his services a compensation, which shall neither be increased nor diminished during the period for which he shall have been elected. And he shall not receive within that period any other emolument from the United States or any of them. From the United States or any of them. In other words, from the whole United States or any of one of the states of the United States. Interestingly, you see, the word United States here is not viewed as singular. It's viewed as plural. From the states or any of them. Today, the word United States has been hijacked, and it has become a singular word, or a singular phrase, as one word, the United States. We should say the states united. It's plural. By providing a salary for the office of president, this clause enables the man less than independently wealthy to be president of the United States. Second, the clause bars anyone from raising or lowering the president's salary during his elected term of office. And finally, the president may never accept any other emolument. Emolument, that's an old word that means perk or pay, any other favor, any other benefit from the general government of the United States or any particular state, so that his loyalty will remain undivided. And what is his loyalty to be to? It is to be to the law of the land. His oath, remember, is to the law of the land. You say, well, wait a minute. I thought the oath was to be to the Constitution of the United States. Well, it is, but the Constitution of the United States calls itself the law of the land, Article 6, lifting that phrase from Magna Carta. And by the way, that phrase, law of the land, our Supreme Court has acknowledged this, that was the old word for our common law. Our common law. But further, what is our common law? Now, there's a tough question for people. Let me put it in a nutshell, and this is what the Supreme Court said, and they're right. Because the old word for our common law, the old phrase, was law of the land, which was still in some use when our Constitution was put in place. But the phrase law of the land means due process. Well, then how can that be common law? Because that's all common law is. Our common law is not about what is to be done. It is about, it is all about how things are to be done. Our common law doesn't include due process, I keep saying. Our common law is due process. Because we focus on the course in America, we should, being a common law country, we don't focus on the result, like the Jesuits, for instance, whose motto is the ends justifies the means. Well, if the ends justifies the means, torture is okay. But at common law, the ends doesn't justify the means. In all the rest of the world, the ends justifies the means because they're under the Roman Code of Justinian. And all of South America and all of Europe and all except Britain and all of the East, the Far East, all of the world's under Babylonian law. And the chief of that Babylonian law is the Code of Justinian and the canon law of the Roman Church, which is one of the vehicles of the Code of Justinian. And because of that, the rest of the world, in the rest of the world, it doesn't make any difference what process is followed. Not really. No, due process doesn't matter. Notice and an opportunity to be heard. Oh, you may get that, but when push comes to shove, there's nothing to say you've got to have it. The Code of Justinian doesn't make it a fundamental right. What's a fundamental right? A fundamental right is a right, a duty that's given direct to the individual from God himself, with no mediator between, no church organization, no priesthood, no university, no government, no high court, no nothing, no university, just no, like Wycliffe said, just a man and God under the open vault of heaven. And there are some things, some duties that come direct from God, and one of those duties that's given to men is due process, and that is it just takes in so much. I mean, right to jury trial, right to remain silent, notice, timely notice, opportunity to be heard, right to cross-examine. All of those are part and parcel of due process. How? Due process, how things are to be done. As the Northwest Ordinance of 1787 said, to follow the course of our common law. 10 minutes is up. I'm watching the clock, so I'll get off.
Hey, Brent, we had a person on here a little while ago. I'm sure you might have heard her talking about the Fifth Amendment and the concern with at the end, because you're in a due process right now, and we got a due process amendment there, the Fifth Amendment. And at the end, it says, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. And I don't know if you listened in, she felt that that was kind of out of place. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I did.
As far as being in the Fifth Amendment, I guess, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, I heard that. And the Fifth Amendment, that clause, called the Takings Clause, no property shall be taken without just compensation, that's lifted from Magna Carta, too. Magna Carta says no property shall be taken, I'm paraphrasing, without due process. Nobody's life, liberty, or property. And by the way, you have property in your liberty, and you have property in your life. Those are property rights, by the way. So that's all tied together, inextricably bound up. But no property shall be taken without, no life, liberty, or property, Magna Carta says, without due process of law. Well, it doesn't say due process of law. It says except by the law of the land. Well, what is the law of the land? Well, it's, our Supreme Court hit the nail on the head when they said this. It's due process. That's what it is. Due process is the law of the land. So that does fit there in that sense. It's all part of the same idea. Just compensation, by the way, is how things ought to be done. That's part of due process. What is due process? Well, you could say it this way. It is the process, the course, that is due and owing to all concerned. Well, what's due and owing? Money. The government comes in and takes your property. They're supposed to give you money. That's due and owing. And there's a process that goes along with that, by the way. And it has to be a fair price, of course. And the question there, though, is what is public use? And that's where we're having problems in our courts. Are strip malls and fancy malls, is that public use? Well, that's a pretty question. What about a sports stadium? Is that public use? No, that's an ugly distraction is all that is. Been distracting us for decades. That's why we're brain dead, because of our preoccupation with all this beef on the hoof, just beef on the hoof. Playing sports, people getting worked up about it. You want to get worked up about sports, go to a soccer game in Argentina and you can join the riot and trample people with other people. That's not Americanism. People think it is. It isn't. There's more to being an American than being a sports fan, that's for sure. And then use that as an excuse to do nothing but steal, take property from people, private property. That there's never an atrocity, but it fits in the Fifth Amendment. Fits in the Fifth Amendment because that's the way Magna Carta presented it, and the Fifth Amendment is listing there some of those rights that are in. All of this is as a woven garment without any seams in it.
I think it looks like it's part of the subject matter, taking a property. So, yeah, that's what I thought, too.
That's the way I see it. Well, thanks for letting me on for a little bit, and we hope we can. Jan okay. and I'll try to communicate. I'll work.
Yeah, communicate with him, and just be able to sign in with the. Do you come? How do you come in? You come in on phone, Skype? What do you do?
I just come in on a phone, but I did see on the website when I was trying to figure this out that you can get in on the internet now somehow.
Well, yeah, you can come in on your browser, but Jan will help you download an app. And you can put the app on your phone, if you got a smartphone, as well as on on your computer, and it's really nice because you don't even have to open your browser. You open the app up and you just connect. And once you connect, you can open up the wall. That opened up your browser, and then different things you could do. But the key things is being able to get into the program automatically and unmute yourself and so on. So we can find you easy, because this particular platform is horrible for trying to find somebody. It's really horrible.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, anyway, I appreciate you letting me on a little bit. We'll talk again. Oh, by the way, you'd asked me to write something about...
Yeah, I believe it was the militia. I'll talk to you about... Well, let's try to talk. I'll think maybe through the week or something we'll talk either live over the program, or I'll give you a call or something. But let me think about what it was that I was looking, but I think it had to do with the militia, because you did a big study on the militia. My knowledge of the militia is minimum, but we'll talk about it, okay?
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Okay, back to you, Gerard. Let's see how many callers we can get in and... 15 minutes, let's say 20 minutes.
404. I don't know where that is. Can you give me your first name and your state?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, if we can keep everyone down to 5 minutes, we can get all four callers in, but go right ahead.
Yes, I will. I've called before, going through a divorce, and boy, just amazed at how the court. How crazy is my attorney who went to law school with the new judge I got signed, never put a motion to accuse the judge, never said objection, just allowed the judge to take my children, take my home, double down on the child support, put me on alimony. When in the state I'm in, there's not supposed to be any alimony if there's a preponderance of evidence of adultery. And just on and on. And he locked me up, made me pay alimony, child support twice on contempt. So he got me in perpetual contempt with 61% of my income taken before taxes.
Challenge their jurisdiction.
I filed it, and one thing, I made a mistake when I filed that special appearance challenge jurisdiction. I didn't get it notarized properly, and so she just filled out an affidavit. Her attorney said that I'm a sovereign citizen and want my all my pleadings filled out. He granted it.
Yeah.
So
just he granted crazy. What? What did he grant?
Just having all my pleadings, pro se pleadings filled out. I filed about 10 affidavits.
All right, well, look at. You got to move your case. Get out of there. Move to federal court, of course.
Okay. I did file a motion for the trial by jury or common law.
And, no. Move your case. Well, you could do that way. Okay. You know,
yes,
first of all, you got to deal with that court. Move it to federal court for cause. And again, you have to have some knowledge of doing this. And this is the problem. A lawyer is not going to do it for you. And people have to able to do it for themselves. And if you don't have the knowledge and the ability, then, you know, you can't do it. You're stuck.
Right.
And, you know, as Jefferson said, if a people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. Forget about it. Just go home and be a slave, because you're not going to have liberty. You're not going to be free, not without knowledge. You can't. Okay? So come on and, you know, you've got time to learn, because remember, everything they do takes time. They love to drag this stuff out, so you can use it to your advantage. And get out there, look at the forms, start moving the process, read, listen, learn, and take control. The first order of business, really, is to understand how to move it to federal court for cause. For cause means that your right of due process is being violated. That court is not giving you due process, and it can't. Okay, it cannot. Okay, they're acting under civil law.
I want to ask you about one form I'm seeing people talk about more and more. Does it matter? It's called a CLF, color of law form. Does that work by having it notarized and sending that one page form in from the DOJ? Is anybody having any success with that?
What page? What are you talking about now? Say it again.
The color of law form, where you're a violation of rights from the Department of Justice.
Oh, where the people are operating under the color of law, and you're applying that against them. But I think that's under USC 18, and there's another one that it's under on the civil side of things that they call it, you know. But you can use those things, but the key thing is this. Look, you're not getting justice there. They're calling you something that doesn't exist, a sovereign citizen. Look, we're all sovereign citizens, if you want to know the truth. We're all citizens. Anybody that's a citizen of the United States is sovereign. And therefore, they need to only answer to the law and not equity.
Right.
Equity has no part with them, only the law. And they're applying equity in the system. Now, it is true. Here is a problem, but a contract under ignorance. They hid things from you, so it's no contract at all. When you go and got yourself a marriage license, you agreed to participate in their process, okay? Now, of course, they played a game with the people, because they blocked you out of a lot of things. And, for instance, one of the things they block you out, if you don't go and get married the way they want you to get married, well, if you're working for a company and you get medical coverage and you want to cover your wife, we'll say, she's not your wife. Well, she is under common law. That's a big, big problem to fight. It's like trying to open a bank account without a Social Security number. Or doing something without a birth certificate. I mean, they put us in a box. But that's a problem. But the bottom line is this, okay? They took you in and you got yourself a license because they trained you to think you had to have one, and they hid something from you. They hid the fact that they now became a partner between you and your wife. And so when you want to get out of that, you got to give them a whole bunch of money with all these lawyers. We got to make a lot of money off this now. And that's the whole game, because it's always back about the money. And they stretched this out for a year, 2 years, you know, and possibly even longer. But, you know, usually it's a minimum a year to get a divorce. People don't know, you know, it is kind of simple to go through the process if you can work everything out with your spouse. But nevertheless, okay, that's the game they play. And that's they'll try to maybe pull that in somehow. But you need to make that point if they do. That there is no contract here, there was no license. I don't think they'd bring that up, but you're not getting due process.
What's a good time to call you guys in the morning to try to get the ball rolling, to get to donate to you, and to get the, you know,
therein is the problem. There's really all the people that are working with National Liberty Alliance is overloaded. We don't have enough people. No one gets paid here. And And so in that process, we don't have an organization set up in such a way that you can, that's why we have open forums here, and people need to learn. That's why we have these courses. And again, this page that we would send you to, if you go over to nationallibertyalliance.org under education, come down to court forms, process, and instructions. You click on that, and you just devour everything on that page. And you will get a reasonably good education to understand, you know, a lot of things on how the court works, how to fill out papers, how to write a paper, so on and so forth. But go in further to our education to get a more in-depth understanding of that. But this will give you enough to kind of start to move through the process, and you can get through all this stuff in 30 days, so you should be able to move through pretty quickly. You know?
Thank you for everything. Yeah. Thank you for the guidance, both the history lesson, amazing, the patience you have with calling. Unbelievable. I've been listening to radio and political and history and everything for 30-some years. I've never heard anybody with the patience you got there. Thank you for everything you're doing.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Gerard, are you snoring on me? Did you fall asleep? Wake up. I think he fell asleep, did he? Gerard? All right, we'll take our next caller here, Lee from New Hampshire. Gerard, you there?
Hear me?
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yep, go right ahead. Lee from New Hampshire is on.
Go ahead, Lee.
Purple microphone. All right, that's better. I can hear you. So
we're going to have to do only a couple of. We're only going to have to do a couple of minutes because
we
want to try to get to the
other person. I'll keep it quick. So did you get a hold of your tech guy about getting off of Adobe Flash Player?
Well, no, I didn't get into any detail with him on that. Trying to remember, maybe were you talking to Gerard or me on that? Because I do remember.
I was talking with you on that. I can't remember his name. Started with a K, I think.
That's Carl. That's our tech guy.
Carl. Well, okay.
One of the things we're doing. We're on a particular program that we created a website with, and we're kind of stuck with it for a while. Once we move and get that critical mass and start to move to a place where start to have money flowing in,
we need this information available on video. Available on video.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've got about probably 20 videos almost done. I do PowerPoint, and then you can create the PowerPoint into a video.
Great.
So
do you have a YouTube channel or something?
We have a YouTube channel, but we haven't got much posted up there now.
Why can't we put the civil course on, or sorry, civics course on your YouTube channel?
Oh, that we couldn't do. We could do little pieces, and that's what we're going to do, is little pieces teaching people on the law. First of all, to do the whole thing in a course on the YouTube would take a lot of my time. And also, not only that, people would be taking the course. We would have no income coming in. We make our income on that course, believe it or not, because, again, we require that people be a premier member. Okay, which means they're giving us $5 a month or more. Hold on, let me finish. They're giving us $5 a month or more. Now, we were giving our courses for free. I mean, we only started charging when we got this new course going up because it's a very well in-depth course. It's pretty much almost the book that we're writing, but it's a high percentage
great.
Of it anyway. But
great.
Here's
that's a great thing
problem.
To keep behind
here's,
the paywall.
Here's the other problem. You see, if people go out there to YouTube to take the course, we have no idea what they've done, if they took it, how far they went, what they actually did. We're trying to certify people, okay? And we give certificates out.
Right, right. And that's the thing that you hold on to, is you have a certification.
Right.
So whether
and
or not
the only
it's
way
been
we could
some
do a
YouTube
certification,
channel thing, you have your own certification, and that's what you're liable for.
Oh,
so
no. You don't understand. We're creating administrators across this nation. These people need to be educated.
Right.
They need to be certified that they
you
went
have
through
records.
A course.
You have records. Your job is keeping records, not holding back information.
Well, of course
like
not. We're
keeping
not.
Records, especially on who has that information, is vital. But holding back the information is just keeping people from knowing how the Constitution
works. If you went out to
works.
Our website, okay, right now, and you go to education, highlight education, and click on weekly topics. Now, this is something we just started about 20 weeks ago. Every topic we speak on, okay? We have a memorandum on it, okay? And so you can go back and see the last 20 weeks of what studies we've been doing, you know, what the focus of the study has been. Now, each one of these, when I put these together, I also put a PowerPoint together. So I got PowerPoints of all these, okay? And a lot of them have the voiceover already. I just got to go back and kind of clean things up, make sure that everything's right. And then I can upload it to YouTube. So people will be able to come to our YouTube if they want to learn some things. One subject might be law and equity. Another one might be the Declaration of Independence. Another one, Article 3 courts, habeas corpus, jury nullification, Amendment 2, Amendment 10, USC Title 18, the birth of a nation, statutes, codes, and regulations, NLA's plan in a nutshell.
But you already have a condensed version.
Huh?
So you already have a condensed version in your civics course.
Right. All this stuff is in the civics course, okay?
Right.
But here's the thing. If you want to be an administrator, we need to make sure you took the course. And that course,
required for administrator, right?
Oh, no, there's additional part to this, but no, an administrator is required to take our civics course, and our consent of government course, which covers the Constitution. That's an absolute requirement. You are not going to become an administrator unless you've taken that course, or are enrolled in those courses and moving through them. We need to be able to look to see, to know where you're at, and maybe the next week to look back and say, hey, they're progressing, or they're stagnant, they're not moving, they're not doing it. You need to do something.
Okay,
if you want the job, you got to do it.
Are courses required for committee men?
Same thing. The consent of government is also required for committeemen. And you may ask me, well, how do I get the authority to require that? The answer I can give you to is this. I'm not going to help a person become a committeeman if they're totally ignorant
of the Constitution.
Well,
if you don't know what the position is, then you obviously can't fulfill the position.
Right. You have to know the Constitution.
Right. And you're keeping records of, well, here's how we've judged whether they're able to do that, and here's the ones who've shown that they're able to do that. By the way, we judged it.
Well, yes. They go through the course. They take the course. At the end of the course, okay, they can request a certificate of completion. Okay, and that certificate of completion, when someone requests that, usually I'll call Jan up and see if the dates are correct and the person completed the course. And once we know that, then we give them the certificate of completion. So anybody who becomes
MIT,
an administrator,
example,
must do that.
Well, right. So MIT, for example, has released all of its courses because it's certifying who has proven that they have the knowledge, not holding on to the knowledge.
Uh-huh.
So, like, MIT has published all of its courses because
they have
the certification.
Here's the other problem here. You know, I haven't been doing this for 20 years, but let's see, I started this in 2012, I think, with the committee man, roughly, and actually earlier than that. I think it was 2009, Gerard, wasn't it? 2009, 2010, we went into the committee man thing? Somewhere around then. And that's when we started to open up a website a couple of years into that, about a year or so into that. And then it developed into National Liberty Alliance, and we've been doing this. We have done this, actually, almost everything here has been out of my pocket, my retirement, everything. I've spent all my money on this.
Well, then you need to
spend a lot of money on this. I put the website together. We did things, and then we started to get some donations to help build a new website. Let me finish this, because this is good for you to know and everyone else. Then we built another website.
I'm just suggesting an update in the technology.
Huh?
I'm just suggesting an update in the technology. If
right.
you want this
well,
to keep getting
I
funded moving
that.
Into the future, you need to have something that lets you get patrons.
Well, okay, in the
nice,
future,
easy,
in the future, in the future, we'll do that. But right now, we will leave it the way it is for a number of reasons. We have certification. I don't know how we would certify someone watching a YouTube to begin with. That's number one.
Oh, no, that's exactly the line that I'm suggesting you draw. Make the thing you hold on to your certifications, and make the thing that you let people access be the condensed material.
Okay, but you look at, you don't go to college for free. I mean, it'd be nice if you could.
I do, actually.
Well, hold on.
I go to MIT for free because I had to learn chemistry, so I decided, let's bring up MIT's chemistry lesson.
Well, look at, you're coming here and you're giving us $60
a year. But I don't have proof that I know it until I get certified. That's what you hold on to.
Okay, now that's a whole... Now you're telling them to come back and take a test after that?
Well, you already require that.
Well, yeah, look, let me understand, you know, the knowledge we give is a huge amount of knowledge, okay? It's a college education. And when someone goes through this course, they're not going to remember and know all these things, okay? But they will have touched them, and that's the key thing. And hopefully understand that. Okay, they may not be able to articulate, they may not be able to remember, but they will get a book, and that book will give them access to be able to look these things up quickly and access that information in order to apply it within the position that they're taking and using. When it comes to the Constitution, though, okay, the Constitution ultimately is simple. First of all, it's really all logical. It's obvious, okay, and it's maxims is what it is. It's a construction of maxims, ultimately, and so the committee man needs that knowledge specifically. But they should have an overall knowledge of things. Now, people may not want to get a very in-depth knowledge of the court system and how it works. They're going to get a good amount of it. They're not going to retain a lot of it unless they really work on their studies and focus in and get into their own research and move it forward that way. But they're going to get all that information. But it's the overall impression of knowledge that you're going to impress inside yourself. Certain things it's going to stick into, and then you'll have a reference book. And with that, you should be able to execute things. And everything comes with experience. When you become an administrator in the first year, you're going to be a little off base and, struggling with it. But you'll get some experiences, and other people get experience. You'll get experiences off other people's experiences that is working with you. And before you know it, you'll get 2 years in, 5 years in. Now you've got some good experience. You've got the knowledge, you've got the reference book, and you've got the experience. And that we all have to build up. Now, meanwhile, today, right now, at this moment, we have bills to pay, lots of them. And who's going to pay them?
Which is why you should get a patron account.
That doesn't work that way, not with us. Trust me. We've tried a lot of things. First of all, we've given everything away. We only moved to a payment scheme only about a year ago, if that. And that we are, for the first time, in the black. Okay? We've been operating in the red, and I've always had to pour whatever money I can into it. And I'm out of pouring money. I can't do it no more. And so either we live or we die. So if people don't want to give us $60 a year, then we'll just die, and they don't want liberty, and because there's no place else they can get what we offer. It doesn't exist nowhere, not collectively anyway, and surely not on the common law. I challenge anyone to find a place that teaches the common law and as accurately as possible. We research every conclusion we have. Sometimes we're in error, and we get corrected, and we take that correction. But you're not going to find it out there. But we don't exist if we don't have some kind of an income coming in to support us. We just don't exist.
Yeah, John, it's
yeah,
10
that's
10
exactly
after
why I'm saying get
yeah.
a patron account.
And we still
we can
have
pick this
three
up
people.
If you want to. Yeah, if you want to discuss
oh,
this.
Oh, sorry,
some more.
Gerard, I just picked you up. What
yeah,
you
that
say?
Was Jen. You can bring
that's
this
Jen.
Up next week if you want, but we
yeah.
should move on.
It's
10
after midnight, and we have three people left in the queue.
But this,
we better move
this,
on.
Our
please.
Pieces,
sorry about
pieces,
that.
Subject
I'll pick it up
matters,
with you later.
Subject matters will go on to YouTube, but our course will not, unless someone shows me something. And again, look, in the future, when we do
well,
have an income from a
well,
different
I do,
process.
I do hope you figure out how to make it accessible on a mobile site, but I won't take any more time in your queue. Thank you very much.
Well, I understand your problem on that, and that we're going to work on probably when we rebuild the next site. I don't think we can do anything with what we're working with right now. I'll ask Carl about it. I understand what you're looking for, and you may be right. So, but until we build the next website, which is going to cost a lot of money, probably, you know, we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars to build what we want to build. I mean, if someone wants to write us a check tomorrow for $250,000, we'll get on it right now. But until that happens, we don't have the money for that. And then we'll be able to do it. But I'll see what we could do for the problem that you're having with the phones, I guess, seeing it on going through the courses and everything on the phones. And we have a lot of videos
well,
in our course.
I appreciate that, but you got three more callers after me. So.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Gerard, you still with us? Okay, let's take Tara Nova. You got the mic. Tara Nova. Tara Nova going once. Tara Nova going twice. Tara Nova three times. All right, maybe next week. Sheila from Indiana, you got the mic. Go right ahead. Sheila from Indiana.
Yes, how you doing?
Good, how you doing? We only got a minute or two.
Yeah, okay. Yes, I just wanted to, I just changed, just letting you know, I'm a member of the World Parliament, and now everything has changed. Just give you one, let's do two things. One, here in Indiana, what I'm doing, I am challenging the commissioner of auto utilities companies here in Indiana and around America, really, but this is just my platform, that the utility bill is not a utility bill, it's a dividend check, and I'm going to go to the county and put them in that I can talk to them and bring them to court, and I want to speak with them on to see what's going on. So that's all set too. The World Parliament, they love to help people or help organizations that's doing big things like this and give us millions of currency in order to do these things. So what I need to get from us is just an intent and the amount of what anything costs, and go ahead and do the whole nine. Everything, the whole ten. Whatever we need to get this demon off this earth, so be it.
So what you basically, what, let's get down to break it down to the most singular important part.
Yeah.
The problem is we're paying way, way, way more than we need to be paying for electric. Is that what you're saying?
No, actually, it's not that. It's just like now it's Christmas. They say it's Christmas time. We're gonna get exactly what we need to go forward to what we need in any department that American Alliance has. Any department, we need the amount that is needed so I can go ahead and represent this to the World Parliament that we are doing our bit here in America. That's
okay.
The only thing. America,
I'm not sure I understand what you're talking about, but I don't think we have the time today to talk some more. Why don't you try to get on early next Monday and get in the front of the queue.
Yes.
And then we can maybe spend some time and you can school us a little on that, because I'm not familiar with it, and I'd like to understand it.
Yes. It's the World Parliament that's working with Trump. That's who is pushing Trump to do what he's doing.
You're saying the World Parliament or the War Parliament? What are you saying? Which is it?
The World Parliament.
W-O-R-L-D.
The World Parliament, been around from the beginning.
Right. I've never heard of that. Gerard, have you ever heard of the World Parliament?
The World.
Or
the World. The
World, yeah. World.
Have you heard of the Earth Federation?
No.
See, these are things that we are far from. This is what I am a part of. I am part of what being...
Can you send me some material on it?
Yes, I sure can. And it's gonna make your day. Because you're a beautiful person, a beautiful soul. It's a blessing that I've been looking at American Alliance, and that is the part that allowed me to be a part of the World Parliament. So I got to do for something that gave me my roots.
All right, send me some information. If you can email some PDFs or web pages or something, send it to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org. This way the leadership will get it too. And then I'll take a look at it, and I'll hopefully be a little prepared for to talk about it next Monday or the following Monday, whenever you can get on.
Yes.
Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we are going to take our last caller. Roman, you got the mic.
Hi, yes, I'm Roman from Arizona. I just want to see, how can you use common law in all these courts?
How do you use common law in all these courts?
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't want you to use common law in these courts. They've shut them down and concealed them, and that's why we're fighting the courts, and that's why we're suing the United States Supreme Court. And going to go after them for subversion if they don't do the right thing. As soon as the deep state is down and out, they better be doing the right thing. Otherwise, we're going to bring them up before the grand jury to consideration for indictment for subversion.
Mm.
Now, there is law out there that you cannot conceal, okay, and they are concealing. And they have in 1934, under the Rules Enabling Act, the United States Supreme Court and the federal judiciary, under the influence or guidance of the Bar Association, wrote the rules of the court. And Rule 2 combined and molded together natural law and equity. That's like putting water and oil together. They're both governed by common law, but nevertheless, it's two different animals. One is legislative law, one is natural law. You cannot bring them together. But they brought it together, and therefore, they created statutes in their courts of law, and they call it civil law or civil cases, okay? But it's civil law. So they've taken that. We're now under civil law. We've been so for quite some time. It was in 1938 when the rules were completed and Rule 2 came out, went into effect. And then we went into World War II. As time went on, a lot of other problems and situations, then rebuilding. And in that time period, when the people wasn't watching, they did the dastardly deed. And the people, most of the people today were not around in those days. And so we... born into being under civil law and not even realizing it. And now, when you want to exercise your liberty or you want to exercise your unalienable rights and looking for the protection of the courts for your rights, you're not getting them because these people all sold us out and they all belong in jail.
And then last question I have is, how come for all the lawyers out there who are part of the Bar Association, their main focus is to protect the state, and also the court, and have the client be the last person that they really help in their cases.
Right. Look, when I talk to a bureaucrat, and I talk to a bureaucrat who may be a representative in Washington, he could be an assemblyman in New York, or maybe someone in town. When I talk to those people and I say, hey, look, we got a problem here because you're doing A, B, and C, and you shouldn't be doing that. And next thing you know it, you're not talking to that person no more. You're talking to their filter. You're talking to their bar attorney. Well, wait a second. They need to answer to us. We don't want it filtered through anyone. We don't want them protected. You just do the right thing. If you think you're doing the right thing and I'm in error, the people are, tell us we're in error. Show us we're in error. But we will show you that you're doing the wrong thing. And we'll lay this out. But they won't listen to us. We have the right, okay, under the First Amendment, the right to petition the government for a redress of grievances. We're not interested in petitioning lawyers for the redress of grievances. They can take a hike, okay? And that's why we're in court doing what we did and how we did it and how we were able to get into the court. We have a court of record open. And it doesn't matter all the evil things that they may say upon us. That's irrelevant. We're nailing the truth to the door of the United States Supreme Court and every federal district court out there and both houses of Congress, okay? We don't care if they ignore us. We don't care what they do. But they're getting it. We're filing it. We're under the auspices of the court. We're filing in numerous places. We're filing it with Barr. We're filing it with the President of the United States. Both houses, both committees, judicial committees of both houses, the United States Supreme Court, and all 94 federal district courts. They can't say they're ignorant. We laid it out 4 years, and now we're in the time of decision-making, and we're putting decisions out. We're doing habeas corpuses. We're moving cases into our case. All this is evidence of the fact that they are ignoring the people, that they are destroying the people, that they are ignoring the Constitution, our right of due process, our right of property, our right not to have to pay slave tax, and all these things. Okay, and when that deep state goes down, and it's going down in the next couple of weeks, we're going to see some hard-hitting stuff, I believe. And when things open up and the people's eyes are finally open to the horror and the evil and the repugnant things that these people have been doing, not only to us as a people through using the government and how they've enriched themselves, but also how ugly they are to our children, to things that are unspeakable. It's all going to be exposed. Right. And when that happens, that's when all the nailing on these doors are going to start to take some effect. That's when fear is going to come upon them. That's when they're going to lose their protection, because they have been ruling every case. They look at it to see if they need to rule in order to the status mm-hmm. quo. And if it doesn't fit to the status quo, you ain't getting through. But once they lose their protection, right. they're done. They are done. And they're going to go to jail.
So then, one question to ask is, how do we reform lawyers that make sure that they work for the people and not the government?
Well, lawyers work for themselves, okay? We got to put it in proper perspectives and proper places. Lawyers belong mostly in equity courts. Of course, you can have a lawyer speak for you in a court of law. Maybe you can't articulate yourself well or whatever the case may be. But everyone, if they're not educated enough to understand how to move things around in a court and to take control of the lawyer that's representing them to articulate the case, mm-hmm. and controlling that lawyer and making sure there's, you know, look, this is my case, it's not yours, and you got to convince me why you shouldn't go the way I want to go. And if you can't convince me, buddy, we're going my way. It's my way or you're going on the highway, and that's that, okay? Mm-hmm. So lawyers, we need a lot of lawyers to really work on titles and understanding all these titles in order to represent the problems and situations that take place in equity court. But when they molded these things together and pulled natural law courts, now we're stuck with all these problems with all these lawyers who have no idea what natural law is, constantly violating our unalienable rights, judges being lawyers themselves, and also born under the same problems maybe or whatever, but they all know the truth on the federal level. You're not going to tell me anything different on that. Every one of those federal judges knows exactly what's going on. They know the crime they committed, and they continue in that game. And so they're going to be held liable at some time. When that sure. deep state falls, well, the only way this is going to continue to go forward is the people step up and take control. They got to fill that power void that's going to take place when it falls. And and you're not going to be able to fill it with ignorance. You got to fill it with knowledge. And that's why people need to get educated right now. If they look at, if you don't care about liberty, and I speak to everyone that's hearing this tonight or hearing this on a recording, if you're not concerned with liberty, then let's just lose it. Because if we don't get enough people to take control of this process, to get educated and do the right thing for our children and ourselves, you know, our posterity, and our neighbors and friends, you're not interested in doing that. And if you think the other guy's doing it, I can inform you right now, the other guy isn't. You're the other guy, and you're not doing it. So, you know, we opened up for committeemen, 3 weeks ago, and we got 17 people who signed up. We're not going to save a nation with that, okay? No, no. We're just not going to do it. People need to step up and do the right thing and stop it. There's nothing to fear here. If you think you can't do it, trust me, you can. You're one of the people. You work off the heart. You only need some basic knowledge and work off your heart. You'll get the right thing done. That's what we need going in our courts, people working off the heart. We need to going in the committeemen, people working off the heart, getting the right thing done, and getting rid of all these evil people. Okay, mm-hmm. People interested in money, position, and power. But again, people don't want it. We're going to find out soon, because I tell you what, if we don't succeed in the next year, I guess we found out people aren't interested in liberty no more. Beacon's light, the light on the mountain, on the hill, is going to go out. And God's already pointing his angry finger down onto this earth. With that, I think we got to close down, but if you want to continue more, join us next Monday.
Sure, and thank you for letting me talk.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. Okay, we're way, way overboard, so we're going to close down. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Lord willing, we'll be back next Monday. And get edumacated, okay? Good night, everybody.